good evening, everybody, and hopefully you can all see and hear me. Welcome to peoplesinternetradio.com. I meant to put the date up there. It is actually welcome to the 1st of the 11th, 2015 AD. Apparently, of course, depending on who you ask. I am a little late tonight. I had a software malfunction. I had to uninstall and reinstall it, but sure, these things happen, and I'm here. Let me know if you can see me in the video screen, which is straight below the chat box there on the main site, and hopefully you can all hear me okay on the radio player. Let me just check that there. That should make it a little bit easier for you. Okay, see, I now have to calm down now after all that rooting around. I'm Vin, and I'm here to talk tonight about, a couple of things. We will have Steve Kerr on with us at about 10 o'clock, and Steve is very well known across many of the sites that many of us would frequent on the internet. He does a lot of filmmaking and that type of thing. So, hoping to have him on. Before we get there, there was a topic I wanted to cover. And this came up again today at the meetup, to a small degree. We meet up, folks, as you know, many of you know, of course, every Sunday. Now, normally we meet Ardgill and Castle during the summer months, but as the weather turns, we go to Millfield Shopping Centre. It's actually like an open area where, you know, you can have tea or coffee, and there's different places you can get it from, I suppose. There's an O'Brien's sandwich bar, etc. And we meet there because it's open and it's relaxed, and we don't, it's informal, you know, we just show up. It's not a meetup, you know, there's no one taking notes, or at least I'm not, anyway. But all are welcome, you know. I mean, if you feel you want to come down and it's a casual chit-chat, by all means, more than welcome to. So, today, as I said, something came up. So, for people who are new to what we do and what we talk about, I suppose, trying to put some of this into a nutshell, it's very difficult because the ideas we've held in our minds all down through the years, me included, they're not that easy to shift. You know, if you have an idea in your mind and you're absolutely convinced through life's experience that it's real and genuine, it's very difficult to shift it. So, you know, we've heard people who've tried to say to one another, you know, money's not real, and what happens in courts, it's this or it's that. You know, you have people who'll say, for example, the judge is acting like a priest in the black robes of Saturn, and he comes in and he goes out and he comes in and he goes out, and each time it's different. All these ideas are out there. So I've decided to boil it all down into just one idea, one single idea for everyone that I think everybody can understand, no matter who you are. Everything, as far as I can tell, and if you know better, if you know different, by all means, Vincent Temp 1 is the Skype to call in, VincentTemp, and the digit 1, or 00353-144-3309 if you want to call in by phone, if you have a question later on or whatever, no problem, or just if you want to make a comment. Everything that happens in court is due to one thing, and one thing only. Whether it's a civil or criminal act, whether it's administrative, you know, municipal, anything and everything boils down to one thing and one thing only. And that's breach of contract. That's it. That's the whole court system. Now, I'm sure you might think, well, that just doesn't sound quite right. And particularly for new people, they say, oh, no, that was an assault. That was he didn't pay his ESB bill. That was he didn't get a television license or no dog license. Or, you know, that was a water worker assaulted somebody, or somebody assaulted a water worker. That was murder. That was this. That was that. That was the other. They're subcategories. Above all of those categories is one singular category, and that's breach of contract. So, let me try and give you a for example, just so people don't think I'm talking crap here. If you assault somebody, you are in breach of contract. Now, what is that contract? Let's identify what the contracts are. People don't have a problem generally when they talk about, yeah, well, in a documented contract, for a breach of a contract contract, like a written contract, You said on the 5th of something you'd do XYZ, or you would refrain from doing XYZ, and you didn't. No one has a problem figuring that one out. But if you're walking down the street and somebody just comes up to you and assaults you, that assault is a breach of contract. What contract? As we move around or about or through, depending on how you want to look at, through creation, as we move about and as we exist, because all are unique, all are therefore sovereign, individual, unique entities. That's what, you know, unless I suppose you're schizophrenic. There's only one of you in there, right? And what is that breach of contract? Well, it's understood, if you will, by mankind and pretty much every other creature on the planet, particularly among their own kind, that, you know, except for, you know, in the natural world, there are certain sets of circumstances, for example, where, you know, I suppose when it's rutting season, you know, two males will fight, etc. But out of rutting season, etc., the contract is, you are free to roam about creation as long as you're not hurting anybody. That's a presumption of contract. I presume, as I walk out my door and go walking down the street, I do have an open presumption, an open offer of contract to the rest of mankind that I will not assault them. It's understood, if you will. It doesn't need to be mentioned. It's silent, but it is there. And if somebody assaults you, they violate you, your body, what they are actually violating is that contract. That is what the violation is about. It's that contract. Murder, of course, is a complete, total and utter violation in every way, shape or form possible, as is, I suppose, rape and violent assaults, etc. Drawing of blood. Bumping off somebody in the street, that's not quite the same. And I'll tell you why. When you bump off someone on the road, as you're passing each other, there is an understanding that because there's plenty of us out there, on occasion, we're going to accidentally, unintentionally, bump into one another. And that's the key. Intention. Remember the seven elements of contract, folks. There are only seven elements. That's all. Everybody should look up the seven elements of contract. Offer, acceptance, consideration, performance, intention to create a legally binding relationship, or a binding relationship, if you will, and intellectual capacity, and lawfulness, lawful terms, okay? That's essentially all the elements required for a contract. Now think about it. As you're just walking down the street, you are open to offers, potentially, and you are open to accepting offers, potentially. You could also show consideration and have consideration shown to you at any moment in time. And you may or may not be willing to perform or to have a performance upon you at any time. Now, assuming you are of sound mind and sound and body, and you may intend to create a legally binding or any sort of binding relationship with somebody, and then with you. And then lawfulness. So in other words, you're open to lawful contracts. You may also be open to unlawful contracts, depending on who you are. Maybe you'll, I don't know, maybe you're a contract killer or something. I don't know. But those seven elements, they are in place just as you're moseying down the road or sashaying, whatever it is you like to do. They're all in place all the time. Right now, they're in place for me and you right now. We're contracting right now. Even though you're not in this room with me, you and I are contracting. If you're listening to this or looking at this, there is a presumption of contract between us. Every single case, therefore, that happens in a courtroom is for one thing and one thing only, a breach of contract. It is the king, the pinnacle, the tip of the pyramid. That is it. As I said, I'm open to arguments against this position. I think this is a real interesting way of viewing it. Now, the way contracts work are simple. The seven elements of contract, think of them like links on a chain, and think of the contract as being something hanging from those links. And if any of the links on the chain get damaged or cut, the contract falls away. It's gone. There is no contract hanging from that chain. It has 7 links. That's very important. If you actually look at some of the symbology out there, for example, now I don't know if this is entirely true, maybe it's another reason, but for example, if you look at the crown, some of the royal coat of arms, you'll see unicorns and lions with linked chains to, you know, the version of the crown, if you will. Some of them only have 6 links, I've noticed. And I found that interesting. In other words, is that a subliminal message in there that, well, we know we don't have a full contract with you, but we still have a bloody chain around you, even if it only has 6 links? That's how you know you're being oppressed. If any of the elements of a contract are missing, and yet somebody is still forcing a contract upon you, that's how you know you're being abused. That is it. That is the, whether it's physical, intellectual, you know, emotional, whatever that abuse may be, that's how you know. You know, if you're in an abusive relationship and you're being, you know, somebody is saying horrible things to you or doing horrible things to you, the reason it makes you feel so bad is because you know they're in breach of the contract. I mean, you came together supposedly because you loved each other or cared for each other, and they, when they do these nasty things or, you know, hurt us somehow, that's the breach of contract. When a baby cries, a baby comes into this world, they know the contract, they know the law, they know the contract, they know I'm here and I need nourishment, sustenance, and because they can't go get it themselves, they cry out. The baby wants breast milk, for example. They can't communicate, so they just, well, they can't communicate, but they just scream. And mammy knows what that scream, and daddy know what that scream means. So the baby needs, so he's saying, hey, somebody's breaching the contract. I'm hungry over here. Somebody's breaking the law for me. I got a contract. I'm here. I have life. I am unique. I am sovereign. Therefore, the law's on my side. Somebody's breaking the law, and I'm going to holler about it. That's essentially what's happening. So it's the same for you and I as we walk down the street, driving a car, flying a plane, whatever. There's an understanding in place that if you drive a car, for example, that you're not going to purposely run over people, right? Well, if you are purposely running over people, we will go and collect together and we'll say, we're going to go get that SOB, because we don't like the idea of being run over. And if we allow you to run over others, what's to stop you running over us when we're not paying attention? That's why these things are out there. That's why these concepts and ideas formed. You see, as mankind's intellect and reason improved, we developed systems of law. Now, in Ireland, of course, ancient Ireland, we had what we, I'm going to use the term Brehan Law. It's not what they called it back then, but we'll call it Brehan Law for sake of tonight's conversation. And Brehan Law, like many other ancient law systems, recognized something about that relationship. That, well, whoever actually damages you, whoever actually breaches the contract with you, they actually are the ones who owe you restitution. Restitution should come from the one who caused the issue for you, and it should be passed from them to you, and even taken from them and passed to you. And they are, you know, it would be made clear to them, we're taking this and we're passing it from you and we're passing it to them, the one you hurt, and that's a little lesson to you. Don't do that again. And you see, what they really mean is, don't do it to them or me. I'm not doing it to you. They weren't doing it to you. You violated them. You broke the contract. It's really a covenant. It's a covenant. It's the covenant of life. We're not supposed to breach that covenant. We're supposed to be good to each other. How difficult is that, folks? Just be nice to one another. It's not that big a deal. What did Bill and Ted in their excellent adventure say? Be excellent to one another or something, was it? I don't know. They had some rock our hand symbol. I don't know. Oh, there'll be theories flying around the internet now. Vin made a devil sign. He's Satan. I had that before. But think about that. It's not a small thing to think about. I like to sit down quietly sometimes and just mull these ideas over in my head. What is this law everybody keeps talking about? What is it? What is its essence? You are its essence. We are its essence. I am its essence. It's our interconnectedness. You see, it's our interactions. As we interact with each other. I mean, who the hell thinks you should interact with people and rob them and con them? Because people do. People do think that. But who are these people who think that? Usually, mostly, I think this is fair to say, mostly the people that do actually think like that, I'm going to say they're defective, intellectually defective. They might look normal, have a nice house, wear a suit, go to work, they might be a plumber, who knows, a builder, a brickie, but they all have this program in them. We've been programmed, and we've accepted these programs. We're just as guilty, folks. We are just as guilty as the system for accepting the programs all these years. And, you know, we've accepted, well, you know, I need to get a job, I need to get money, I need to get a house, I want to get married and have kids and yada, yada, yada. So I have to go into business. I have to get a job. And if you go into business or if you get a job, if you go to that job and you don't give what you agreed to give to the employer for a day's work, effectively you're in breach of contract. You're stealing, effectively, you're stealing. If you're self-employed and, you know, you agree a price to do a job, and if you've, you know, fattened that price up a little bit, you're stealing that whatever above and beyond what the job is really worth. You're actually stealing. If you're buying something for a dollar or a pound or a euro and selling it for £2 or $2, €2, whatever, you may be stealing. Now, I say you may be stealing. You may not be. You know, once your overhead is covered and whatnot. But this idea that it's dog eat dog and we need to profit from each other, that is not sustainable. In fact, that is an act of war. That's an act of war that you and I used to, you know, well, I used to do too, that you and I were committing against every single individual we ever did a business transaction with by being an employee or by being employed by self, for example. And that's a hard thing for a lot of people to take on board. It really is. But think about it. We have been told this all our lives. It's a dog-eat-dog world out there. Don't worry about anybody else. You look after yourself. Look after number one. But that's a lie. Because looking after number one is what we should be doing. But we're looking after the wrong one. What I mean is, the one we should be looking out for is every other individual that we interact with. That one. You're saying hello to Mr. and Mrs. Smith. That's who you should be prepared to protect if necessary. And you should be good and decent and nice, have some integrity, be nice to people. It's actually not that difficult. And yet so many of us choose not to do this. Now, I know this is very philosophical, if you will, and you might be thinking, well, what's this got to do with me mortgage payments I can't afford, Vin, or me car loan or my credit card or whatever the issue you have ongoing in your life, or I got these forms about vaccinations for me kid in school, what the hell will I do? Or I got a cop knocking on my door. My attitude, and I think this is a good way to go, and I would really appreciate your feedback on this, folks, but my attitude is, anytime I'm talking to somebody, I must always be prepared to be the one to protect them. And to defend them if necessary, no matter who they are. And to care about them. You know, so let's say, for example, you're a cop and you're knocking on my door. Well, maybe I won't open up. Well, I definitely wouldn't open. But let's say we're walking down the street and, you know, you're a cop or whatever, a guard, and you physically stop me. You see, when I let you know that once I find out, well, once you identify yourself to me, whatever way, let's say you physically stop me and, you know, I say, well, are you addressing me? And you say, yes, I'm addressing you. Well, who wants to know? And you say, well, I'm a cop, yada, yada, yada. Well, he said the magic word. He was an officer. Okay, well, I'm going to accept and acknowledge your oath of office, and I'm going to hold you to that office. What am I doing there? He's made an offer of contract to me. It started off initially, if they physically touch you, that's, you know, that's a violation. Yeah, that's breach of contract right there. But they're going to try and shift that into their office. They're going to say, well, my office can handle certain types of potential breach of contract, you see. That's essentially what the office is. The office is potentially able to cope with breach, or what appears to be initially a breach of contract, of the contract of peace, harmony and whatnot. But why? Well, if it turns out that the guy's suspicions about you were correct, that you were a nasty piece of you-know-what, and that you had maybe hurt or assaulted somebody, then you see, his breach doesn't count, because you, if you initially had violated somebody else, him grabbing a hold of you and thinking, whoop, you violated that guy, I'm holding you, you're under arrest. That's what's being arrested. He has arrested that contract, that breach of contract that you maybe committed somewhere else. Now, if there was no breach of contract, he will try to, he's trying to establish a contract with you. He won't know that. Okay, that's what the training does for them. They are trained, like, you know, sit, roll over, play dead. They're trained, just like dogs. And that's what they call a training. I mean, they do call it training for a reason. So, they don't realize this, of course, which is why I say, well, they don't realize it, so let's not hurt them. Let's not cause them any harm. So let's make it clear to them. I accept and acknowledge your oath of office, and I am holding you to that office. Now, if they now do something outside of the remit of that office, well, you were honest with the guy, right? You told him, hey, I'm holding you to that office. So now if he does something outside of the remit of that office, it was just the guy that did it to you. It was no longer on Garda Síochána Síochána or whomever it may have been, you know, whoever. It is now that man or woman, right? It's just them now. So you don't, for example, go and sue on Garda Síochána Síochána there. That's where the guys in Integrity Ireland, for example, are finding out. That's what I'm talking about this. You go and sue the man, Bob Smith, for example. That's who gets sued, not on Garda Síochána Síochána. You may also have a potential claim in there as well, through their other processes, but you can privately prosecute that man. Why? Because he acted outside of his office. In other words, he left the office to violate me. And then he tried to jump back into the office for protection. You see? You can reach into that office, grab a hold of him, and pull him back out into the world of privacy. And you say, you and I have an issue, just you and I. And I'm going to take you to a judge. Now see if we, the Irish people, or any people anywhere, see if we lose that ability. If we lose that, if that's done away with. We are simply slaves from that moment on. And there's nothing worse than that. Sorry, I just see somebody sent me a private message there. Just let me double check. No, sorry. Oh, I know what's wrong. Okay. So how are we doing on the main chat? Let me just have a look. Sorry, I've got the monitor with the chat over here, folks. So I wasn't paying too much attention. Sorry about that. So yeah, so if anybody wants to call in and they have an opinion, or they have something they want to say about that, or a comment, or is there anything else you think I should cover on that, by all means, let me know. Or even just type me a message here on Skype. We can do it that way too. Wow, a lot of messages coming in Skype. Two messages there. Yes, I'm going to respond to this one. Sorry, folks. And, sorry. I know. I got to type and talk at the same time. It does not compute. But you see, the covenant is really a better term for it. That idea that I'm going to come here, wherever here is, and I'm going to, you know, because I got to be nourished and to become a matured man because I had a good, decent mother and father who fed me and clothed me and looked after me and made sure I was warm and dry, and they educated me, and they, you know, they put so many sacrifices into me and my brothers and sisters. And I think that should be something that I should respect and admire and reward, and I do. I love my mother and father and my family. And my, you know, I do my best to maintain positive relations with them all. And the same for my children. I think, well, I want to pass this on to my children. And I'm seeing it here. I mean, so many of you that we meet regularly at the meetups and about, such decent people, folks. It's incredible. You know, and I think sometimes is it too easy maybe to get frustrated with this stuff? I think it is. It definitely is. It's very frustrating. And we've seen the treatment some people are getting when they go into courtrooms and they try to, you see, when people go to a courtroom, we the people are seeking justice. We are seeking justice. But you don't get justice in there necessarily, but you do get the legal system. Boom, 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 boom. Rule 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You will get that. If you perceive the result as justice when you're done, well, then I suppose you got justice for you. If you don't, you're left scratching your head going, that that didn't seem like justice to me. You know, had elements of justice. It kind of looked like a duck and it walked like a duck. But actually, when I looked closer, it was a wooden duck, right? The law is simple. Cause no harm. That's the law. And if somebody causes harm, somebody broke the law. And the law is the contract. The law is always the contract. So, for example, in a civil dispute, it's a breach of contract. Somebody broke the law of the contract. Somebody failed to maintain one of the seven elements. Now, for a breach of contract, it must be intentional. And why is that? If you're walking down the street and you accidentally bump into somebody and they go, oh, excuse me, you see, oh, please, please excuse me. Me, that's your flesh and blood body, you see, your mind-body combination. That's me. We don't say, excuse my person. We don't say, oh, excuse Mr. Byrne, or excuse this body, or excuse the spirit was... But we don't say any of that. We say, excuse me. Me. And that's very important. Me. But why do we say that? I know you're thinking, some people don't. But I mean, the decent people that you know. Why do we say, excuse me? You're asking for their forgiveness because it was an honest mistake. In other words, it was unintentional. You did not intend to do it. And let's say they were carrying a vase, and because you bumped into them, the vase got knocked out of their hand and they hit the ground. You owe them a vase, folks. You do. They wouldn't have dropped it if you hadn't bumped into them, right? So you do. You owe them a new vase. Now let's say they say, oh my God, That was a Ming vase worth 50 gazillion euros. You do still owe 50 gazillion euros. Now you might say, well, how can we justify that? Or how can I justify that? Do you own the 50 gazillion euros or do you own a vase? Maybe that's a better way of doing it. Yeah. So you owe him a vase. You don't owe him that particular vase because that particular vase is now gone. Now he would seek, generally in civil suits, they would seek the value of the vase. But actually, in reality, all you actually owe him is something fairly similar to that, capable of doing whatever that was capable of doing. So if it was a Ming vase, yeah, you owe him a Ming vase, but you can't give him a Ming vase because you don't have him, but you can get him a vase. And that's compensation. You're restoring to him that which he had because it was unintentional. Now, if you're unaware of how the legal process works and it was a Ming vase and the guy gets real upset with you or gal and they say, no, I'm suing you for a $50 million Ming vase. I don't know if they're... He can try to do that. The legal system, just like paper, does not refuse ink. The legal system does not refuse suits at law, as what they call them. Does not refuse them. So, if you don't know how this operates and you end up in a court for walking down the street, looked at something, turned the other way, boom, you bump into somebody and they drop their Ming vase. And if you don't know how this stuff works, you'll end up in a courtroom and let's say the judge is not, he's not having a great day, okay? You could very well end up having to pay $50 gazillion to this guy for a brand new, or the value thereof, of that Ming vase, if you don't know how to handle yourself. And that is what's happening. People are going to courts with banks over a couple of hundred thousand euro mortgages, etc. And because they don't understand how this all works, and they don't understand how to engage the court and to get things moving, they get screwed. The people are being screwed in courtrooms at the moment. How are we doing time-wise? Okay, about another 5 or 6 minutes for our guest. So, the idea... I just want to move this on to one other little thing before we get our guest on, because I want you thinking about this during the talk, and after, when I'm done with Steve Kerr, we'll come back to this topic, okay? But I want... This is another thing that raised its head during the week with the research team, guys. Every time you see in your paperwork, this is mortgages, for example, we'll just stick with mortgages for the moment. So this is, think solutions here, folks, or potential solutions. There is no such thing in Ireland as what's known multi-party litigation, okay? They don't allow it. At the moment, the Law Reform Commission had a thing on it there, I think it was 2003, but essentially... Multi-party litigation in foreign jurisdictions, you might know as a class action lawsuit, for example. They're not allowed over here. Now in America, yeah, and other places, class action. I think there's even a movie called Class Action, right? A class action lawsuit is where a group of people together all go and, or a group of entities, persons, at, you know, legal persons, all collectively sue one individual. Right. Now, here's something. In relation to mortgages, particularly here in Ireland at the moment, and probably England too, again, check your jurisdiction, whether multi-party litigation is possible or not. Now, this arose with a case with Ben Gilroy, for example, and I'm just going to ask Ben to have another look at that case from about a year ago, I suppose. And here it is. If the switcheroo has happened... You borrowed money from Bank A, and now it's Bank B, and Bank C, and Bank D, and now it's, I don't know, Pepper Finance, and this company finance, and these debt collectors, and you're like, how the hell did I get all these contracts? I didn't borrow money from that guy. I didn't borrow money from this guy. I didn't. Just think of like a family chain. You think, well, hang on, that's the son, that's the father, that's the grandfather, that's the great-grandfather. I borrowed from the great-great-grandfather. So why is his son... His great-great-great-grandson, or great-grandson, would it be? I don't know. Why is he the one suing me? And in fact, so if you may have borrowed from AIB, and now it's Bank of Ireland, and it's Ulster Bank, and now it's, who knows? Now, in a courtroom, they'll try to tell you, oh yes, 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 well, yes, this is Pepper Finance, for example, taking the action now, but we are the original entity as well. And you say, well, hang on, then if that's the case, then are you telling this court, for example, that the original entity still exists? Actually, they'll say, yeah. Here's the great part about it. They will say yes. And are you that party? Well, they'll try to say yes, but clearly they are not. Have a look at their company names and their company numbers. They try to tell you, they try to convince you, well, we're the same family, yeah? I mean, I'm still a Mr. Bourne. My great-great-grandfather, he was a Bourne. His son was a Bourne. His son's son was a Bourne. And we're all Bournes here. I mean, yeah, we're all Bournes, right? No. You may all have the surname Bourne. They may all have, you know, elements of each, but they are not the original entity. In other words, what's actually happening is the banks are being let use the process of class action lawsuit, essentially, that's what it looks like to me so far, anyway, against you in a court of law. Or, suppose a court of law. A civil court, anyway. In other words, if banks can do this form of what appears to be a class action, why can't you? And if they can and you can't, and they'll tell you you can't, then how can they? So I think this needs quite a bit more scrutiny and a bit more attention focused upon it. Who knows exactly where it'll pan out? I don't know. But I think that's I think that's definitely something worth looking at. So I'm going to just pick a tune, folks, and I'll go see if I can get our guest. But you see, if you ask them, are you Bank A? They won't. They're not in the affidavit, Judge. Every deponent has to have their identity, name and address, etc., on the affidavit. Didn't the Master of the High Court chuck that out there recently? Whatever. The rules of the court. But if they're not on it, why aren't they on it? Pepper Finance. You didn't borrow off Pepper Finance, folks, right? You didn't. So why is the official offer important in this place? Sorry, if you haven't heard of the official offer, madesimple.com. Official offer madesimple.com, folks. If you're in trouble with your mortgage, do go have a look at that site, and I think you'll find a useful remedy there. But essentially, it's like this. See, I send to Pepper Finance. This is a cigarette lighter and my cigarette rolling case, by the way, folks. I use a manual cigarette rolling case because I'm absolutely crap at rolling cigarette. So what we do is we send the official offer to them pending. Oh, that's interesting because the lighter is green. The lighter is green, so you can see the scenery through it. Okay. Pending. Have I a different colour lighter? I do. That should be better. There we go. Right. So what we're doing is we're sending them the conditional offer. See, it's not a direct contract. It's a pending. In other words, if you're entitled, here is, it arrives and I read the offer. And basically the offer is, what the silent part is, if you're entitled to take this lighter, this valuable consideration, this lighter, off this contract, thereby accepting and acknowledging this contract, pull it off. And they do. They separate them. As soon as they pull that check, cash, postal order, whatever it is, from that, that's their signature. That's they've signified their acceptance. That's what they're doing. And they have done so. And that's the acceptance of the contract. All the seven elements were in place there. Offer, acceptance, consideration, performance, blah, blah, blah. And if you don't, yep, it's like this. If you and I are in a pub, say, and you come up to me and you say, hey, Vin, remember last week we were having a few pints together and it was a wild night? And I go, yeah, great night. And you say, yeah, well, you don't seem to have remembered, but you borrowed 50 quid off me. Are you sure? I mean, I don't remember borrowing 50 quid off you. Are you sure? And you say, oh, yeah. And you don't upset your friend, and your friend looks very genuinely there. Let's say your friend is looking at you like, no, you borrowed 50 quid from me, right? And they're doing this. And you genuinely can't remember, okay? You don't recall. And you think, well, we were on the beer, we were firing them down good-o. I don't want to call my friend a liar. I don't want to break the friendship. He seems genuine. But something in the back of your head is telling you, I think he's confusing me with someone else, a different guy. But he's my friend. And he's not trying to deceive me. So what do you do? Moral dilemma. Well, let's say, make our friend or whatever. Seriously, I genuinely don't remember. I mean, I don't upset you, but I do not remember. Have you any way of maybe jogging my memory, or was someone with us, sir? I mean, you're basically saying, can you document and verify the obligation, right? But you're trying to do it in a nice way, because you don't upset your friend. And I'd say your friend is genuine. He goes, well, fair enough. He doesn't seem to remember me lending him the money, so, well, I don't want to take advantage of the friendship either, so I'll say, oh, okay, well, Mary was with us. And Mary's brought in. Mary, do you remember me lending Vin 50 quid. And Mary goes, no, but I do remember you lending somebody 50 quid. Now you see, I'm thinking, well, more than likely that's probably me that she remembers. But let's say somebody else comes into the room and says, walk straight up to your friend and says, oh, there you are, I've been looking for you. Here's that 50 quid I owe you. And these situations can happen. The best way to think about this stuff, folks, is try to put it in a situation you understand, in a pub or, you know, your local tennis club, whatever, how you interact with people, your neighbours, you know, somebody borrowing a cup of sugar off you. Think of these things as you try to figure out what's going on with bank contract law. It makes it so much easier. Now, let's say in that same situation, what happened was that, let's say your friend was under pressure and they knew you were absolutely blotto last week and they knew you wouldn't remember and they knew you have a few quid and they were stuck and they're chancing their arm and they're actually trying to deceive you. In their head, maybe they're thinking, I'll make it up to them somehow, but they're actually trying to deceive you. Let's say they're no longer your friend, essentially, but they're stuck, so whatever the reason is. And you know damn well, you remember, you think, nah, even though I had a few beers, nah, I don't remember giving this guy, or borrowing 50 quid off this guy. So you say, I'll tell you what, and in front of witnesses. So I'll tell you what. If you're entitled to it, you take it. I'm not giving it to you. It's passive. I lay it on my hand. If you're entitled to it, take it. They now know if they take that from you and they are not entitled to it, they now know that they are stealing from you, and so will the bank. That's why you send it to the bank like that. You say, hey, here you go, bank. If you're entitled to this, take it. If not, you should send the whole lot back to me. But if you're going to send the whole lot back to me, don't try and say, I'm sending that whole lot back to you, now pay me the money you owe me. I sent this to you because I didn't have all the money. I didn't have the price of a Ming vase. But I'm going to give you something. I'm going to give you a vase. You'll still be able to draw water. You'll still be able to draw breath. I'm not trying to hurt you here, bank. I'm trying to protect you. The official offer process, folks, is you trying to protect the bank. How bizarre is that, really, when you think about it? But essentially, that's what you're trying to do. You're saying, well, I don't want to break the system. There's loads of people all around who depend on that system and they rely upon it. So it's not up to me to break it. I didn't create it. It's not mine to break, essentially. So actually, I'm going to protect it. And that's how you protect it. You make an official offer. Okay. Yes, I'm going to go and see if our guest is ready. You ready? Question mark. There we go. We'll see if he's ready. And I'll stick on a song in the meantime. What have we got? Oh, yeah, I actually like this old song. Haven't heard this in a long time. Okay, folks, back just after this. So, welcome to People's Internet Radio, Steve. Did I have you on before? I don't think so, actually, did I?
No, I spoke with Sean McGuire a couple of times, but I don't think yourself then.
Yeah, never myself and yourself. Anyway, well, welcome. So, maybe, do you want to maybe start telling people a little bit about why you're on and what you've been doing, you know?
yeah, sure. Well, I suppose I have a couple of websites and YouTube channels. The first one I set up was Reality Ireland, and I've been making videos on that since, I suppose, 2012, since I began to wake up somewhat to the world we live in. And that was that. And I suppose there's just over 500,000 video views on the various videos on that channel. And then in the last couple of months, I set up another website and YouTube channel called the Irish Media Alliance. And that was a similar idea, only with the hope of bringing on board more people who have various skills, creative skills, whether it's in graphic design, video, videography, video production, and as well as that, bring together people who have carried out research in a certain subject, because there's, you know, there's some fantastic people around the country who've carried out research into different topics, but they don't necessarily, or they may not necessarily have the skills or resources to get their message to their target audience. So that's what I've been doing. I've self-taught myself graphic design and videography along the way, getting some tips and hints from friends. And when I first was getting going, I had €800, I remember, to buy a camera, and I knew nothing about doing anything with cameras. And I asked a friend of mine, Dylan, what should I buy? And he recommended I should buy the new iPhone 5 at the time. He said, brilliant for someone like me. So I thought, brilliant, I'll get that. And it turned out it's so handy, and there's a couple of different programs you can get with it. So that's what I've been doing for the last couple of years, making videos and talking to people and trying to do whatever I can. And I suppose the reason I'm on with you now is because I made a video there a day or two ago just about a recent experience I had where my camera was taken off me in court.
Now, can we expand on that a little bit? If you don't mind, just because I think it's important people hear this, the details.
Yeah, well, I suppose in the days leading up to this specific court case, I didn't even know who was in court, but I could see these messages or comments popping up on various Facebook pages saying that there was a court case on in Castlebar, and it was about, you know, it was vague enough in detail. But on the morning, I just remembered, and I said, gee, I must go in and have a listen to that. So I went in on whatever day it was, and I sat for a few hours, and that was fine. And it ran on to a second day, so I came in the second day. I think it was just before lunch, about maybe 12 o'clock. And I sat up near enough the front of the court. There was definitely less than 10 members of the public in the court, and there was probably about 20 members of An Garda Síochána. The case was, it was in the circuit court, and it was a litigant, and his father was with him there as well. And he obviously, this man was the plaintiff, and he was alleging that two members of An Garda Síochána, a sergeant and a superintendent, had illegally broke into his apartment and basically smashed the place up, is what he was saying.
Now, sorry for interrupting you, but yeah. I'm sure many of us have seen that video, because the video is up on, is it on YouTube or Facebook, the video?
It's on YouTube, and actually somebody may have put it on Facebook as well, I think.
Right, but I think people, if you haven't seen that video, folks, we will make sure to put a link into the chat, and if somebody has it, please. Actually, I think Donegal's already done it. Is that it, Donegal? But in that video, Steve, I mean, that's quite shocking. That's basically An Garda Síochána ripping this up, the little blue book constitution. They just totally, did they knock? Yeah, well, so they did, but with a big sledgehammer. They're not supposed to do that. Do we know what the background to that was?
Let me just think. From what I remember is, I believe that, you know, the guards knew the man. Like, you know, he was from the town.
Right.
He was from the town. It was local guards, and it was a local man.
Right.
And they knew him. I'm not sure if they tried to get him on the phone or not, first of all. They called there, and you can see in the video what happened. They didn't spend too long. Now, that clip that's up there, I suppose it might be 30 seconds long, but the original clip I was sent is maybe 45 seconds long. It took them an extra 10 seconds more to get into that door.
Oh, you were being generous, were you?
Yeah. But there was no knocking going on now. The sledge went through straight away, and they were pushing and shoving for an extra 10 seconds.
Okay.
So that was that. The background basically, to be honest, I don't want to give too much of the background, because what happened that day in court, the litigant, the plaintiff reckoned that he was really getting a hard time by the judge and wasn't allowed to bring up a lot of issues and a lot of evidence that he wanted, and he wasn't happy. So they ended up walking out of the court that day, just abandoned it, saying, we're not going to get any justice here with you, so we're out of here. So they're currently sizing up their options, and I mean, they had always wanted to have brought it to the High Court, but they were obstructed from doing that, so they brought it to the Circuit Court. But they may try that again, and if not, I mean, they have a lot more footage that they're going to put up as possibly a last resort if it comes to that, if it doesn't look like they're going to get justice anywhere, any other way.
So then, on the day in question, in the courtroom, as it were, you were basically in the public gallery just bearing witness. Is that essentially what was going on?
Yeah, that was it. And I think what annoyed the judge, you'll hear from the video if you see it, the one I put up, but basically the judge tried to said, all right, I want all the members of the public out. Clear the courtroom here. And bear in mind, there was like maybe between 5 and 10 members of the public there. And
did he give a reason for that?
No, and that was the thing. That's what I first of all I said, and numerous people said. They said, "What are you doing? It's a public court. What's your reason for doing it?"
I mean, was there a ruckus going on, as they say? Was it just everybody just kind of what we have to be cleared? What's going on?
Well, I mean, look, if I was the judge, and you know, I would never want to be a judge, but it could have been fixed quite simply. There was, as far as I can understand, you know, the man himself could have had at least 2 members with him who would be his counsel, so to speak, or maybe he could have more, but 2 anyway, I think he would be allowed to have up beside him.
Okay.
Now, it was a bit messy. They were kind of a little bit scattered because they had a lot of documents with them. They had a lot of folders. They had a computer that was hooked up to a little bit away from them. So they were kind of all over the place. You know, they were new to this. And a few times, if the judge said something that was questionable, one of their council members maybe, or maybe the odd time someone from the public might have said, "Ah, no, but hold on. Now, it wasn't anything serious." You might have seen other videos that happened in Castlebar Court over the last few months where things seemed to have kicked off a little bit more. There was nothing like that. Someone might have spoke out of turn, and the judge kind of got a bit pissed off, basically. And she said, "Right, look, I've had enough of this." Now, she could have just said, "Hold on, who's your counsel here? Who are you with here? Right, they're yours. If there's anyone else down there," bear in mind, there was less than 10 people there. "If there's anyone else down the public there, if you cause any more trouble, you'll be out," right? She could have just said it like that, and then because there wasn't a big crowd of people, it would have been very easy to identify who was doing the speaking. Now, I hadn't opened my mouth that day, and I hadn't turned on my camera, but it was at the point where she said, "Everyone out," I stood up and I said, "Why are you removing everyone from the court?"
Sorry, just for clarity, hadn't been recording and you hadn't said anything up to that point?
Not a word.
Okay.
Nothing was recorded. I hadn't even turned it on. Because, just by the way, the previous day when I was in there, a guard came over to me. I was holding my iPhone. Now, I like to keep it in my pocket with all the radiation from those phones. I like to keep it out. And when you have it on silent or on vibrate, if you have it on the wooden seats, it makes an awful racket. So I just hold it. So a guard comes over to me and says, "Is your phone turned off?" This was the day before. And I said, "No, it's not." And he goes, "Turn it off." And I said, "Well, no, I won't turn it off. If you want to tell everyone else in the court to turn off their phone, I'll turn off mine. But you can be pretty damn sure every one of those guards has their phone turned on." So that went over and back, and the judge addressed me then, and she was like, "Well, will you just leave your phone up here beside me?"
Oh, really? She made you an offer?
Yeah. I said, "I'll tell you what, judge. If everyone in the court is prepared to leave their phone up there beside you, I'll do it. Is that fair?"
You wouldn't see the judge behind the mountain of phones.
Yeah, I don't see why I'm being singled out here. You've asked me I'm a recording. I've told you no. And, you know, I'm saying, are you making an allegation that I am recording? And she said, "No, I'm just asking you, are you?" And I said, "Well, is it a serious matter? Are you alleging that I am?" And, you know, she wasn't going there.
Okay.
So maybe I kind of got their back up with that, possibly. But anyway.
Are you aware, though, that there's no actual even legislation as such in place to say that you cannot record in a public courtroom?
Yeah, well, that's what I've heard. I've kind of been looking around to see if I could find anything. And
I have.
Yeah. Okay. What do they have? They have some of their local rules or their in-house rules. Is that it?
Sort of. They'll say, "Oh, there's a sign up there" or something. But you see, they're all just optional, to be honest. That's just optional.
Yeah.
I mean, technically, if you were in a courtroom with a pen and paper, just writing down what you hear, that's recording what's going on in the court. You're recording it. That's a record.
Yeah.
That's what it is. So, but anyway, sorry, go on.
So anyway, where were we? Yeah, basically then I stood up and she said all the public removed. I stood up and I said, "Judge, what will you tell us why you're removing everyone from the public court?" And she ignored me, and there was a few other people saying similar things at the time. And then I quite visibly and obviously held up my phone and turned it on. It wasn't as if I was trying to conceal it. And said, same thing again, "Judge, will you tell us why you're removing everyone from the public court?" And then she had alerted the guards to it and told them to take my phone. So at that point, I really didn't want to hand the phone over. So I kind of made a dart for the door. I mean, there was 20 guards in the place and, you know, they hopped on me fairly quick and they managed to wrestle it off me. So that was it. We were all removed from the court. We hung around for the guts of a half an hour until lunchtime. I saw the sergeant come out first and I said, "Sergeant, can you tell me which member of the guards has my phone?" And she said, "No, I can't, I don't know." I said, "Would you be able to find out and take it into your possession? Because I'm quite worried about some of the content on that phone." Like, bearing in mind, I've had it since 2012. Every single text message conversation I've had with anyone from that point is registered. And not that I'd be up to anything, but, you know, any
well,
little...
it's private, isn't it? It's private.
It's private. And, like, any little piece of information in the wrong hands, you know, if the person's so inclined, they can use to cause difficulty for you or for someone else.
It's not just that. I mean, if you were sitting on the bench beside me, Steve, and you put your phone down and I just casually picked it up and started going through your text messages, I'd expect you to give me a black eye, you know?
It's
rude.
So I just was bearing in mind that, you know, I'm sure there's some members that, of the guards that maybe think I'm a troublemaker, whereas that's not the case at all. I just, where I see injustice and I can help expose something, I'd like to do it. But some of them, I'd imagine, I'm sure some of them would think, you know, they'd like to maybe get something off of me or cause hassle. So I want to know who had the phone. I thought it was reasonable to ask. And I said, all right, well, would you mind finding out and taking it into your possession so I know it's safe? Because I'd be worried if it's in the wrong hands, what might happen? And she said, no, straight up, no, I won't. I said, okay. So I walked up to the Garda station. It's only up the road from the court, and I asked to see the chief superintendent, and he wouldn't come out. He was busy or he was doing something. And I asked for the sergeant who I'd spoken to in the court, and I asked the same thing again. I asked the man at the desk, but he asked the sergeant to take the phone into her possession, and I got another negative response. And then I wrote on a piece of paper, I asked the guard's name I was speaking with, and I was very polite, and you know, and I said, guard, would you just mind signing this? It's basically just saying that I was in here talking with you today, and that I ask you, would you ask that the sergeant bring the phone to her possession, and that she had declined. Would you sign that? No, I'm not signing anything now, Stephen, no. You know, it's amazing when you ask them to sign off on a conversation you've just had, that just freak out completely about it. So that was it, and that was, what, Friday 3 weeks ago. I still haven't got it back yet.
At any stage, were you asking for the return of the phone as well, Stephen, or were you just saying who
has it? Yes, I didn't actually. Yeah, there's a bit more to it. So that was at lunchtime. So 2 o'clock came, and the plaintiffs went back in, and within, I suppose, half an hour, they had abandoned the court. They said, no, we're not going to get anywhere here. So I was just, me and three or four others were out in the hallway waiting to find out what would happen. And when the plaintiffs walked out, a guard came over to me and said, the judge wants to speak with you. So I was brought in front of the judge. It was still full of guards in the courtroom. And the judge said, right, well, I'm finding you in contempt of court. We've had a quick look at your phone, and there's evidence to show that you were recording. So we're going to hold you in contempt of court now. So I was brought down to a cell below the court. Not actually into a cell, it's into a little office. I could see all the buttons on the wall for flushing the toilets in the various cells. So it definitely wasn't a cell I was in. Just a little office.
Like a little control room type of thing.
Say again?
Like a little control room.
Exactly, yeah. Control room with cameras and TVs and stuff. And there was four guards there with me, and they went... They were decent. We were kind of chatting away. But they were carrying out their search on me as well. And, you know, I really don't like that, you know. So they're going through all my stuff and want me to take out anything. But I object to that, and they ended up putting their hands in my pockets and taking everything out. Which,
sorry for interrupting you. Can I just ask, had they said to you, you're under arrest or anything like that at this stage, or did they just physically move you, or what? You know, how did that happen?
Well, when the judge said I was held in contempt of court and I was going to be brought downstairs, I was brought. Well, I walked. I wasn't going to fight it, you know, the rear side of me, so
I walked alongside.
They never said I was under arrest or anything like that. I was asking what's going to happen from this point, and they said, oh, jeez, I think you might be going away for a week's holidays now. So I was interested to see how far she was going to be prepared to go with this, because I really didn't think that the punishment was...
Well, you didn't commit a crime, let's face it, Stephen.
Even if it was a crime in their eyes, it was 10 seconds of recording, and it wasn't even the actual case. It was when this judge kind of got peed off and said, all right, everyone out now, we're going to do this in private. That's what I didn't like.
Well, would you agree, firstly, there is no firm position being expressed by any government minister or, you know, from them down, that recording in a court is... A, illegal, B, unlawful, C, not allowed, end of story. I mean, if that were the case, there are a lot of YouTube videos out there, Steve, of people who've put up footage, who've recorded in courtrooms, and let's face it, if I can find out who they are, they could find out who they are, and they're not doing that.
Yes.
Plus, the public courtroom, they say it's a public environment. In other words, there's no presumption of privacy as such in that area.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like a public street, right? It's just the public part of the courtroom.
Yeah.
It's public.
Yeah.
So it's the same. In other words, if you were just filming, I don't know, you're filming your buddy out on the street, say making a video for something for YouTube or something, and they just come up and arrest you for contempt. It's really this. I mean, what's the difference?
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
Well, that's it. And it's. I mean, what can you do really when it's the judge up there on her high seat and she's calling the shots and you've 20 guards down below? I mean, even if I wanted to, you know. You can't do anything. You literally just have to be polite and go with it and kind of hope for the best. Like, they brought me back up after about a half an hour down there, and she said, she referred to some case, some Supreme Court case. She goes, I didn't take it in, and I was kind of argumentative to her because I was trying to put across my points to her. She said she was relaying the events as she saw it, and I said, yeah, but hold on a second, Judge. I wasn't recording in the court for any point in time, only when you asked for people to be removed. And all I wanted to know of you before I started recording is why you're removing people. And you didn't give any reason. Only reason you said is that you have the right to do it. So I was trying to bargain. I was trying to,
you see, again, in the court rules, they will claim in their court. You see, this is where you have this idea. Say, hang on now. Either it's your private court or it's public. And they're trying to say, well, my court, you see, in my court. In other words, they're basically saying when you come into my court, you're no longer in the public, even though you're supposed to be in the public. They tell you it's public. So there's this whole grey area. I think, I genuinely think this issue needs to be raised more and more because I think, well, we need clarification on this, don't we? I mean, would you prefer to know, for example, that it was absolutely clear that no recording in courtroom is absolutely allowed with some legislation or something, so you could read the legislation and say, okay, well, there it is, and I can potentially challenge that. I could take a challenge against that legislation in a court, a constitutional challenge, or whatever.
Yeah.
But this idea at the moment where it's just hanging in midair, isn't it? Nobody knows. They don't even know half the time, because sometimes they're clearly going for people and other times they aren't. And they know other people are recording. I mean, let's be honest, Stephen. Every bloody reporter from newspapers, they're all recording in courtrooms.
Yeah, of course.
They'd be mad in the head if they weren't recording the audio.
Because if we're going to be quoting from it later, like, you know, it's as handy to have a little thing.
Could you imagine the lawsuits? Could you imagine how many lawsuits if reporters in court were misquoting people because of gammy? No, go away. They're definitely recording. Definitely.
Yeah. And like, I mean, I have been in the court numerous times where I know there's people recording. It might just be audio, it might be video. And there's always when there's a good number of men and women in the public gallery, you know, the guards can't really do an awful lot.
No.
But they picked their moment well the last day. And I suppose, you know, I let them in. I wasn't really thinking. I wasn't expecting. I really wasn't expecting it, to be honest. For the phone to be taken off me and held for this long.
Right. So let's get a couple of other things clear then. Your attitude to everything. I mean, I've seen you in action and I know about your arrest in the city centre and I know about your success there, even though it cost you a bundle. And maybe we could talk about that for a little if you don't mind. But essentially what that demonstrated to me was, this chap, Steve Kerr, he's a peaceful, easygoing type of chap. And you are, right?
I hope so.
You're not a troublemaker. But you're somebody who's not prepared to have your rights trampled upon, essentially. And you're also prepared to stand up and say, you're trampling on that guy's rights. You are actually prepared to say that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd like to think so. So, I don't know, Vin, like, I mean, before I put up this video, and I was reluctant about making that video, to be honest, because I'm aware now that... how many members of Gairdí Síochána is there? Is it like 60,000 or 80,000 or whatever it is?
No. It's 13,000, I think.
Oh, sorry. Okay, I don't know where I'm getting that figure from. Anyway, the point is...
Maybe that's what they want.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so. The point is, you know, I'm worried that, you know, when you make a video like that and you kind of, in a way, slag off, and I hope I didn't slag some of the individuals off too much, but at the same time, I'd worry that it'd be a case of, you know, any other members looking at that going, well, he's slagging off one of our boys now, you know.
Well,
so I really don't want to make an enemy out of these people.
Isn't it a case that, you know, when they are training guards, they say to them, now, we want people in the Gardaí who are, you know, stronger than the average man, intellectually, physically, and woman. You know, you're supposed to be made of harder stuff. You're not supposed to be some, like, shirking violet, you know, some gentle snowflake. You're not supposed to be, you know, they're not supposed to be hiring these type of people to be Gardaí. You know, you're going to need to be able to mix it sometimes, and you're going to have to take verbal abuse. That's the job. It comes with the territory. So I don't think you were unkind to them, really, to be honest. I thought, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have four letters here that I've written to the chief superintendent, and also for the attention of the Garda Commissioner, the Minister for Justice, the new GSOC chairman, our chairperson, Mary Ellen Ring, the Attorney General, the judge in question.
Who's the new one? Mary?
Mary Ellen Ring. I think she's one of the incoming GSOC, new GSOC chair people. Also to DPP Claire Loftus, the President of the Circuit Court, Data Protection Commissioner, sent it to Integrity Ireland, crew, Transparency Ireland. And, like, you know, I've addressed it to the chief superintendent and all those other people, and I ask 18 different questions about the events of that day.
Okay.
There was four of these letters went before I decided to put that video. And the last letter I got back from the chief superintendent is, bear in mind the previous letters, I said, look, I want to deal with you here. I don't want to deal with your superintendent, because your superintendent and myself had issues on the day, because he pushed me a few times in the court and he was one of the main people that grabbed my phone. So I didn't think it was appropriate for him to be the one corresponding with me. So I said, I want the chief superintendent to deal with the questions. And in the end, he's just passing the letters on to a superintendent, the man I had issues with on the day, and he's replying to me and they're ignoring all these questions I've asked, which are valid questions. So the video was kind of a last resort, I thought, because I wasn't making any progress.
So there's a question come in there from somebody saying to me, can we explain the rules of court and how they're interpreted? And you see, this is the problem with all of this stuff, Stephen. It's that, I mean, even this, the little blue book constitution, folks. If you open the constitution, or this version of the constitution, you'll notice there's almost no punctuation in this. The absolute bare minimum of punctuation. They do the same with statutes and acts and all of that stuff. And it's the same with the rules of court. And the reason they don't is every time you punctuate a sentence, you're closing down, or if you will, you're restricting what the words mean. So it's the difference of, you know, no dogs allowed, or to no dogs allowed.
Yeah.
You see? Because they don't punctuate the sentence, it can say either no dogs allowed or no dogs allowed, you know?
Yeah.
So, and that's the problem with this stuff. So, you know, and as you find, I mean, you basically were taking a bit of a gamble that day, in fairness, Steve. I'm sure you knew this could go horribly, horribly wrong, right?
Well, I didn't even think about it, to be honest. Right. I wasn't expecting the public to be removed. And I wasn't expecting me to stand up straight away and say, what are you removing everyone for?
What was the phrase? Unmature recollection.
I mean, it really, I didn't play the odds that day. I wasn't thinking, you know.
You don't sound shocked, I'll put it that way.
No, it was probably bound to happen at some stage, right. But it's just unfortunate now, because even if I do get the phone back in the morning, you know, it's not as if I can't trust anything again. Yeah. They've had nearly a full day with all my apps on the phone as well, like Facebook and Twitter and email and everything else, because it took me a few hours to get to a computer to change those login passwords. So, I mean,
well, as far as I know, they're not supposed to go poking around in all of those. I mean, you can see if you get it back, or if and when. You can take your phone to a tech guy who'll be able to tell you, here's what they went into, here's what they logged, here's what they checked. So you will be able to tell all of that stuff. Your phone will have a log of all of that in there. I don't know what it costs, but apparently it can be done. We've heard they've deleted videos off people's phones, and yet people bring the phone to a phone guy and say, there was a video on there that was deleted, can you find it for me? And the guy goes, yep, no problem. You know, couple of quid, but he can do it. It can be done.
So does that also mean he'll be able to go and find out all the videos that I've previously done and deleted? Because some videos I've made for people are just gone into storage and to come out at a certain time if needs be, you know?
If they're on that phone, then the guards are probably, they've probably downloaded your phone. They've probably duplicated everything on it. They have a device. They get your phone, they plug it in, and they go, they press a button, suck everything off that phone. Now, deleted would be different. If you delete something, the way it works, think of it like something, like think of a piece of paper with the story on it and the title. When a computer deletes things, you see, it essentially just cuts the title off and it leaves everything there. And the next time you read or write something to that memory, it just overwrites it. But until it gets overwritten, it's still there. The title has just been cut off. That's the way computers work. And a lot of people don't know that. And that's why you think, well, I've deleted it, but you haven't. It's still in there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'm sure they're having fun, so.
Well, again, nothing they can find in there could be admissible, I don't think, under these circumstances in any other case, but they would sure be glad that they could know it, if you follow me, even if they couldn't use it. You with me?
Absolutely.
And I'm not suggesting there's anything untoward in there, but what I'm saying is if people have given you private information, you know, pertaining to a different case, it's a toughie. Mm. However, as I can't see them being able to use it. It would be inadmissible, basically, because, you know, they're only allowed to use the thing, if you will, for the purpose of the arrest. So, for example, they should only be looking at your phone to see, on that date, did he record in the courtroom? They have no business looking anywhere else, and they really shouldn't. I don't think they're supposed to. I mean, I think in theory, they can get into a lot of trouble if they do. You know, that would be, well, it would be like, well, my car was robbed, guard, and it was robbed out in my garage, and he comes and you leave him alone for an hour or two and you come back and you find out he's been upstairs rooting around the wife's knicker drawer or something like that. You think, what the hell are you doing in here, right? The car was in the garage, it wasn't parked in my wife's knicker drawer, you know?
Yeah.
So, I know that's a bit of an extreme example, but you know what I'm saying, folks.
Yeah. I mean, I just thought, when I was arguing with trying to argue my point with the judge, you know, I said to her, I said, "Judge, there's literally 10 seconds of footage on that phone from today. Can I help speed up the process by showing you or showing the guards where the footage is? You know, I'll show you where it is." But no, it had to be sent away for analysis for 3.5 weeks. You know, it doesn't add up. You know, I'll show you where the footage is. Come on, I'll show you right now. Let's delete it together.
Yeah. 3.5 weeks.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a long time. Okay, have they told you you can have it back or not? I mean,
no, that line in that... Oh, yeah, here's the last letter I got from the fellow writing to me who I don't want to be writing to me. And his last paragraph is, this came on, like, Friday, I think, is it? He says, I am to respectfully inform you that the technical examination of your mobile telephone will be carried out expediently, and on completion, a Garda report will be submitted to the circuit court judge for her determination. Right, so the phone will be examination will be carried out expediently. And what the hell has been going on for the last 3.5 weeks? It's 10 seconds of footage, like.
Yeah.
So what does that mean?
Wow. Somebody else just sent me a message there. He wants to call in. That's okay. He said this is a similar situation to his own.
All right.
So, yep, call in by all means. In fact, here, I'll pull him in. There we go. That's Cody. And just have your radio turned off, Cody, please, before you answer. So, I don't know if... Did you hear about Cody's situation, Paul? Or Steve, pardon me.
Is this? I'm not sure. Is this the man who was? Did it happen on the same day? Finbar Murphy stood up.
Yes.
And, I heard briefly. I don't know if I know the full story, but yeah, I think I did hear about it. Yeah.
Yeah, he should be on the line. Are you there, Paul?
Greetings. You see me?
Hey, Paul.
How's things? Yeah, I was listening in on the story there, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I went through a case, sounded a bit similar. There was accusations made over recording. But a judge can't tell you to tell everybody to stop recording. Because even without recording the voices, it goes in my memory. So it's been recorded.
That's, yeah, absolutely. I've made that point quite often. Are you recording? Well, I'm always recording.
I'm always recording.
Yeah.
And that's why a judge won't say no recording devices. She'll say, anybody in here with mobile phones, put them away and you all comply.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, there's an interesting one from It's All Make You Uppy. How about sending them a daily invoice for usage for your phone?
Well, my next thing was actually, if you don't mind me cutting in again,
sure.
I actually got my phone back, so I did, because there was no recording on it. Again, as I didn't get in, they tried to do me for contempt, but I asked the question, was it civil or criminal? So therefore, I couldn't be done with contempt.
Mm-hmm.
So there's things there that we can ask them.
Absolutely.
But basically, they can't tell you no recording because you can't switch your brain off.
Now,
they say no recording
on
phones
that,
and tell you to put them off. As for getting your phone back, you go for the name of the guard that has the phone and you put a claim in against him and you stand in court, I'm only here for this, for my phone. Mm-hmm. After you invoice him for every day holding onto your phone.
Well,
I can't do that if I hadn't got the name of that person. But if you had my phone, I'd want that guard's name. Once I got his name, I would be going into the courts, putting a claim against that man, and saying, I'm only here for this.
Okay, but
my phone back.
In fairness, number one, I don't think Steve is up to speed on maybe some of that stuff. I'll check. Are you, Steve? Are you aware of any of that type of...
I've heard it, but I've never done it, so I wouldn't be up to speed. No,
right. I understand that. Maybe you might want to have a private conversation with the guys offline about that type of thing, rather than broadcasting it live. But at the same time, you know what I'm saying? Like Cotty's position essentially was a writ of habeas corpus had to be done, and he was freed essentially from imprisonment, false imprisonment. You know, and again, he'd been accused of recording, but they checked his phone, and there was no. Did they have a phone? Did you have a phone that they checked, Cotty?
I had two phones.
Right, and they checked them, and there was no recording.
Didn't.
And you were badly. I'm just going to say you were badly treated, shall we say?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, in fairness,
do you mind just asking how long, Paul, did they have your phone? Did they take your phone on you for?
Well, it was more how long had they got me for.
All right, they had you and the phone together.
But as soon as I was released, the two phones were my phones were handed back. Actually, one of the phones was handed to Ray because it was a phone that we used for Unmetal Newer. But my own personal phone, which would have, like can take pictures or anything like that, was handed back to me when I was released.
Right. And how long did they have you locked up for?
5 days, I think it was.
5 days, yes. Yeah.
For allegedly recording, is that it?
No, alleged contempt of court. But as I heard you saying earlier on, they never once turned around and said to me, the judge never said, be quiet, because I never spoke.
Mm-hmm.
She never says, be quiet, remove him from court, mm-hmm. or you'll be held in contempt.
Yeah.
I was taken unawares. And then after that, they tried to press a charge, tried to get me in contempt of court, which they couldn't.
Not only that, Stephen, I hope Paul doesn't mind me saying it. When Paul was taken back up from the cells to be prod in front of the so-called judge again, he was actually naked from the waist up and barefoot. And he'd been, you know, people in the court said he was badly bruised. So maybe, Cotty, do you want to maybe just expand on that a little?
Well, even at that point, they tried to get me done with contempt again. And I asked a simple question, is it civil or criminal?
Mm-hmm.
Because without asking that question, if she said civil, well, you need a contract to say I can't record in there. But you can't sign a contract like that because your mind's always recording. It's not a criminal offence because I haven't hurt anybody.
Yeah.
So I knew that they couldn't do nothing even if I did record.
No, but the point I'm making is, though, that the treatment,
sorry,
the physical treatment you got, and how come you ended up back up in that court naked from the waist up and barefoot and according to some, bruised. I mean, can you expand on that a little?
Well, that happened downstairs now. Okay. Not as such.
Okay, fine. Well, we leave it. But you did end up back in the courtroom in that state, yes?
Yeah, I ended up back in the courtroom.
Yeah, no, I just wanted Stephen to know that because, as I say, like Steve said there, that they weren't actually quite decent to him. It sounds like they were. They I don't think they were so decent to Cody there, Steve. You catch my drift?
No, I ended up coming back in the court barefooted with just a pair of jeans on me. No top whatsoever. I went down fully clothed.
And which was what was even more amazing was the judge never asked what's going on. I mean,
well, you know, not even the quick look at the
you know, I mean,
if that was a woman, not being allowed go in there.
If it was a woman, it would be on the front page of half the newspapers around the planet.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and like to stand there and try and make it into a trial, a half naked man that hasn't even been charged, read his rights, because you have to be charged before you can be read your rights, as far as I know.
Well, there was an interesting one there a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if you saw this, about a week and a half ago or something like that, a guy who apparently in the court, don't recommend this, folks, but apparently in the court, he dropped his pants and mooned the judge. Did you hear that one?
That was in Monaghan.
Was in Monaghan, right.
It was a traveller.
Right, well, what I'm saying is, you know, he got into trouble, apparently, for being butt-naked in the court, and you were stripped, practically butt-naked, and...
I was stripped naked, and then taken away again after that, even. And yet there was still no contempt of court made at that stage.
So, but look, can I get back to Steve Cody? Thanks for calling in, because I just want to get back to the real reason, the main reason that he's calling in, and why I asked him to come on.
Go on, no bothers.
Fair play. Thanks very much, Cody. Cheers. Okay, just remove him from the group there. Okay, we should be back with Stephen. So, sorry, Stephen. So the real reason, of course, you wanted to call in, which is what caught my eye, was your post on Facebook. And you put up a post on Facebook explaining that your camera had been taken, and you need a new camera to do the work that you're doing. And you had a little donate button there. Actually, could you do me a favour and drop me the link to that donation site, because I'll share it with all the guys on the website as well. I chucked in a little something from PIR, folks, only a little, just a token something.
You did, thank you.
And we could do with, Steve could do with others, doing a little something as well. What I'd also say is, if somebody has some equipment, some camera equipment, Steve, that's available to you, would you be prepared to accept that? Or what are you looking for? What do you need? Tell us what you need.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't even like doing this, but I decided I'd try and turn a negative into a positive in one way. Like I mentioned in the video that, as well as my iPhone, going back a couple of months, or before the start of the summer, I became pretty good friends with a man called Latif Yahya.
I've seen some of his videos. Wow, yeah.
Yeah, he's really inspirational man. He's, you know, I've got a lot of his books now as well, and he's working on another one. He's just released another one actually at the moment.
What was he? He was a doppelganger for one of them.
He was forced to be the FIDE, or the bullet catcher, for Saddam Hussein's son.
One of his son, Uday Hussein, wasn't it?
Uday Hussein,
He was to be the doppelganger, not the fall guy, in other words, yeah.
Wow. Exactly, because they looked very similar, obviously, throughout life, and Latif came from a fairly decent family. They were into different businesses, and they were fairly well-to-do, and he, as a result, went to a good school, and didn't your man Uday arrive in the same school? And he had the brainwave one day that, Jesus, your man looks very like me, I'll bring him on board. So he gave him an ultimatum and made him an offer he couldn't refuse.
Yeah.
Not that he wanted to take him up on it.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you see his movie, The Devil's Double, you'll understand
That's why it rings a bell. I've seen some of his material there on YouTube, etc.
Yeah. So anyway, I became fairly good friends with Latif. He was actually living down in Leitrim.
Right.
For 12 years, married an Irish woman, child and all that. So
have we got a citizenship issue sorted yet, or
no, not at all. And actually had to leave the country, and so he's away at the moment, and he's trying to sort that out. But the troubles he has had with the guards over the years, he's currently writing another book at the moment. His fourth book, this will be, it's called 40 Shades of Corruption, and that's about his dealings with An Garda Síochána and the Irish state. So that's brilliant. So anyway, Latif gave me this beautiful camera. I couldn't even tell you what it is, but I have photos of it, and a tripod and a professional lighting setup. So that was great. So it was very functional, it was brilliant, but it also had some sentimental value because, you know, I have such huge respect for this fella after reading his books and becoming friends with him. But another friend got into some trouble, not his fault again, also on Garda Síochána related, and basically needed some money. So I felt obliged really to try and help if I could, and managed to. I actually got a great deal. Another good friend of mine decided to, or was willing to buy this equipment off me for $2,000, which I was short at the moment. I needed another $2,000 to help this individual. And this man said, okay, I'll tell you what, I'll buy all your stuff off you. I'll give you the $2,000. You give me all the stuff. But I know you want it back. You know the man. So I'll give you an option there if you actually want to buy it back off me. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking that would be ideally what I want. I want to get his stuff back. You know, this may not go anywhere. It's not the end of the world if it doesn't. You know, I just thought something shit crap has happened here. I'll try and turn a negative into a positive. And if I can also get back this, you know, this original present or gift that I got off Latif and continue doing what I did, doing what I do, using that, that would be the ideal situation.
So, I mean, in the meantime, I mean, do you have anything at the any equipment at the moment?
No.
Right, I mean, so even a camera. So, like, I mean, I have, see the likes of this little digital camera, the likes of these.
Yeah.
I mean, is one of these any good to you?
No, I do have a little Panasonic one that I got a couple of years ago, which would be similar to that. So right. I do have that.
Because, because you can have this one if it'll start you off or help you out in some way. I mean, that's no problem, you know.
No, that's a really nice offer. I appreciate it. But no, I'm fine on that level. I do have one of those little cameras, but I suppose now for what I have, like recently I have, like everything I have is pretty much make do. Like I've got one of these, projector screens, long white projector screens
that
I can mount up on an old mic stand. And I have some other cheap lighting I'm using at the moment, and I have another little audio recorded device I bought. But essentially, it's a nice white background, and it's a nice professional look when I get it all going. So it's a little mobile studio, I suppose. You can put everything in the boot of the car, but it looks professional when you have it recorded. It's like the ones we did with, if you came across the videos we did with Finbar Markey for the Mortgage Arrears series.
Oh, very good, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a nice, clean, professional look.
The term, it's like a pop-up studio.
Exactly. So I'm just thinking now, like, those cameras are great and all, and you know, they're so handy and they get the job done. And I was using maybe some of those cameras like that more so for the Reality Ireland website. But with this new website, the Irish Media Alliance, people can have a look at it. It's not obviously near finished yet, but you can see the kind of look of it. And I'm kind of going for more of a professional, mainstream, corporate look, even though that sounds horrible. But to be taken more seriously by maybe Middle Ireland.
Because, I mean, that's essentially what we're doing here on PIR now, what we're doing right now, in fact. I mean, you know, I'm broadcasting a fairly decent high-definition video as we're doing this. I mean, this is broadcasting live over video and over the internet radio. And it looks a little bit on the corporate side, I suppose. But, you know, well, we have these capabilities. And, as you say, I think it's important for people to be able to see and hear you. You know, so the video element, the visual element is significant. I mean, for example, Stephen Manning in the videos he does, like, you know, when you look at that man talking, or Joe Ducey, you know damn well they're telling the truth because you can see it in their eyes. You can actually see they're being open and honest. And I love the name Integrity Ireland because you can tell, that's integrity and that's decency and that's honesty right there, and all the other people who are involved in that. You can tell. A blind man could tell, nearly, you know. So so what are we talking? So you're looking for, I mean, it's a case, for example, but if somebody had, say, looked something like a Canon EOS or one of those, you know, those relatively big, juicy cameras, something like that, if there was one of those available, would that suit you? Or do you specifically want to get that other equipment back?
Oh, well, no, if there's anything, I mean, I'll take it. I want to start recording stuff again. Yeah. Like,
if you have two folks, I'll take the other one, you know, just saying. I thought I'd throw that in there.
And the other thing as well, I'll just mention, I want to just throw in another link here I have, Vin. I'll just throw it in the chat. It's the idea behind the Irish Media Alliance. So if there's other people out there listening that are graphic designers or videographers, or they have any other various skills like that and they want to get involved, here's the kind of concept, and maybe people can have a look at that. It's just the Media Hub page on the Irish Media Alliance. So, you know, if there's anyone out there and they want to do this sort of thing or team up, that's what that's all about. So,
brilliant. Well, just so you know, that's me, actually. I've been doing the graphics thing now for a little while. So if there's something you want done that way, I'm more than happy to do it for you as well. Sorry, second link location. Just let me get that other link location for you and I'll put it into the chat. There's the donate link in the chat, folks, and the Irish Media Alliance link there as well. Are you getting a video feed from me at the moment?
It comes and goes. It's back now.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Well, I turn it off and I'm having a drink or smoke.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, yeah. So I'm getting it the whole time, yeah.
Okay. But, I mean, I'll give you a quick example. This intro here, I just made this intro this afternoon. This is one of my little graphic things here. So that's the type of thing I can do. I mean, I can do that in like 5 minutes. I made that. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right. What do you use to do that then?
It's a piece of software called Bluff Titler.
Bluff Titler.
Okay. The 500 yo-yos are thereabouts, but it's pretty good. And then you'd also need then, say, a video editing software to take that into then after you've produced it. And
I get you. Yeah. And did it take you long to learn that skill?
No, but what I've been
graphics
a few months. But what I've been doing is so that I made a video there for Direct Democracy. I made one for some of the other guys who wanted for the December the 8th demonstration. So what I'm saying to the groups out there: look, if you have a little video you want done, let me know, and or the graphics, and I'll do the computer generated graphics for you. And by doing these other projects for people, it's helping me and it's helping them. And I'm going to have to do the... It's like somebody who's cutting hair. You need volunteers to sit down in the chair so you can cut their hair. So I want to learn how to use this stuff, so I have to do the projects anyway, you know, the type of way. So I said, well, I may as well do it for them, or I may as well do it for these guys. And it's a kind of an open offer out there. I'm doing one for the 1YI guys at the moment as well, yeah?
Brilliant, yeah.
So I'm happy to help you out there in that way as well.
Great. Well, that is the whole idea, the whole kind of concept behind the Irish Media Alliance.
This is what togetherness will make us stronger. But this is how we have to actually come together and say, well, I need this done. Who'll do it? I'll do it. Done. And that's how PIR works, you know.
Yeah, brilliant.
And saying that, actually, that just reminds me, if anybody out there has any old PCs, we could do it a PC for somebody. Doesn't have to be state-of-the-art. Just if anybody has a second-hand or an old PC that they're not using or an old laptop, do give us a shout, because we have someone who needs one. And again, and like regularly, Steve, that's the way it works here. Somebody unlocking my door one day saying, I have this old PC in, I haven't used it in a couple of years, but will it do? Yep, we'll take it. We'll, you know, add a few bits to it if we have to sometimes, and we pass it on.
Yeah, excellent, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the way to do it.
Oh, it is.
So, that's basically the story.
Yeah, just to go back in time a little bit to the other situation that happened, where you, I'm going to say, where you won your case. Did you win that? Was that a win? Do you classify it as a win? The one with the so-called jaywalking, if you want to call it, for want of a better description.
It's hard to know. Like I like to think of it in a win in a way, but it's left a bit of a sour taste in the mouth at the same time.
Yeah, but what did that cost you all in?
Well, I mean, if you take it, it's roughly €50 if you're in petrol up and down to Dublin from Castlebar. Mm. Sometimes you might be in court at 10 o'clock or whatever. So the odd time I go up the night before if I had to prepare, you're getting food on the go. The way I worked it out roughly with everything and the amount of letters I sent and registered letters and the amount of phone calls to people I was on over an 18-month period and 12 trips to Dublin, it was coming in just as around €3,000.
And you're just, what, suck it up, you're out of pocket, you won your case, get out.
That's it, yeah, yeah. I put it to the judge on the day when he'd struck out the charges. I said, I read out a little piece about all my expenses I've incurred and the whole lot. And he goes, I'm not sure now, blah, blah, I'll have to check the rules. So he went away and he got up and he left for 10 minutes. He came back and he brought a big book with him and he was flicking through it anyway. And he said, no, unfortunately now, under district court rules, such and such part, blah, 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 the DPP are not liable for any expenses. So that's that. And I said, yeah, well, fair enough, but, you know, I want you to set a precedent here. You know, I've been proved that, you know, that an injustice has happened here.
Justice is not supposed to cost you money, right?
Yeah. I didn't want any big. I just wanted to get back what I had lost. And no, so you can imagine, Vin, how many times I was very lucky that I had the phone in my hand that time, and
oh,
I could
blessed.
See that this guard was getting a little bit irate and a little bit fucking hot-headed.
Excuse me. You're
but
okay.
How often does that happen to people on a daily basis around the country, and they don't have a camera handy?
You see, this is the problem. On top of all that, when people hear your story as well, they think, well, great, he was found innocent and all, but Genie Mac, it cost him $3,000,000.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Suddenly, you don't, you know, you could understand somebody thinking, well, I'm not going to film this because what if I get arrested and it's going to cost me $3,000,000? Forget about it.
Yeah.
The lesser of two evils. But what I'm saying is, because of that, is that not going to encourage corruption, Stephen? The fact that it costs you $3,000, even if you're going to be proved innocent, does that mean it's ever so slightly less likely that somebody will record, just like you did in the courtroom there? Is it now going to be less likely somebody like, you know, like you or whoever actually records in the court? You see, I think the right way to do it would be really to make it clear and plain in advance, prior to going into the courtroom, with the clerk, say, you know, let the clerk know, by the way, the case number, yada yada, in 3-4 weeks' time, that'll be a case I'll be attending, and it's my intention to record before I get there. I'm letting you know. If you have an issue with it, tell me the legislation that bars it, and I'll deal with it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think let's go about this the right way.
Well, I know the Integrity Ireland lads, at one case I was in it there a few months ago, I think it was in the district court, this one, and there's some rule that obviously you're not in the district court rules, you're not allowed to record unless you have prior consent by the judge. So the lads in question on the day stood up and said, "Judge, I'm asking you for permission to record these proceedings that they were involved in." And the judge said, "Why do you want to?" And they give their reason and said, well, no, I'll tell you, no, we won't record, but if there's any problems, you'll be able to get access to the recording. Is that fair? So that was their, own case, and they had went about it the correct way as far as they were concerned.
Right,
now, you say doing it in much more advance.
Well, I think give them way more notice.
Yeah,
on top of that,
yeah,
the digital audio recording, do you know what that costs to get your hands on that?
I don't know. I don't even know anyone that's done that, actually. No, I heard it's a couple of £100 anyway, is it?
I think it starts roughly in around 400.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not, let's face it, in these times, that's not cheap.
Mm.
You know, that's a significant hunk of money.
Yeah, yeah. Well, how could it possibly be that much?
Well, it's an impossible amount of money if you're, say, unfortunate enough to be on the dole at the moment. You know, think how many, what's that? What's an average dole payout? It's like £150 or something for most people, I think that's the average, or 180. I mean, that's, well, you have to starve yourself for 2 weeks, you know?
Yeah. How did it come up with that valuation? I mean, what sort of work does it take for someone to chop out? Like, I used to work in a local radio station, and someone come in, someone come in to me going, "Oh, I did an interview there on such and such a show. Can you just pull out the segment?" "Yeah, no hassle. Give me 5 minutes. There you go. Put it on a disc for them, or send it to them in the email."
Exactly.
You know? Let's
face it.
How did you get the valuation?
Yeah, it's 5 minutes for somebody who knows what they're doing, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm the same, you know, I mean, you say to me, "Vin, such and such, we said something in a podcast there 6 months ago," I'd say, "Hold up, I'll go into the computer, there you go."
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I don't know. Can't win.
Oh, you can't? No, you can't. You see, I think congratulations are due to you, because you stuck with it, Stephen, and you did win. That's why, you know, in case somebody's complaining about the amount of yo-yos that Stephen is looking for here, that's what I'm saying. Let's take that into consideration, folks. He's gone and done the right thing for and on behalf of not just himself, but of the people, I think. I think that's you deserve that accolade. You're already out of pocket $3,000, and you did have equipment, and, you know, yeah, it's a couple of grand. So I think I'd like to see Stephen Kerr have that equipment, folks. And if I had it, as I said, if I had it, I'd send it to him myself. But if you have it, or if you have a couple of quid available for him, how can they get in touch with you, Steve? I mean, if they an email or anything like that, or just through your Facebook page, or...
Well, there's the Irish Media Alliance has a contact page, but I have my own. I don't really have a phone number at the moment, but I have.
Okay. you get the guard station at the moment.
Ring the local guard, Castlebar guard station.
What guard station is it? Hello.
09490222222222. All the twos. Give them a buzz.
No, don't.
Yeah, but yeah, I know what you mean, Vin. Like, I have a problem asking for money. I don't like it. I don't normally do it.
Everybody, I do too. I mean, we operate through donations as well here. That's how we're still here. We wouldn't be here if there was no donate button on the website. It just wouldn't happen, you know.
Yeah.
And now I'm a kind of a build it and they will come type of guy. I mean, that's what I like about, I mean, most of the guys here on PIR and gals, that's the way we operate. We're, you know, it's build it and they will come. And that's why we've been trying to improve things and make it as good as we can. Make it as good and as professional as we possibly can. Not because, you know, we're all about ego and stuff. It's just, it's more presentable, you know.
Of course. Yeah, and you, more people are inclined to look and go, geez, this is a professional outfit here. I want to listen to what they're saying. That's
we're an amateur,
the way it is. If you look professional, people listen to you.
Yeah, we're amateur people, but hopefully with a professional, you know, skin, if you will.
Yeah.
But look, we're happy with how we're going. And as I say, that's how we get by, is donations. So I have absolutely no problem asking for donations on behalf of another. And I think, if you're out there and if you're listening, please, if you've seen Stephen's work, he's a very dedicated individual. I'm going to say stuff that you can't because you'd be too embarrassed to. He is a very dedicated individual. I think that's plain. And maybe, if you haven't got anything, what can you do for him or this idea? Can you maybe do a fundraiser? Anything. People out there have ideas. You know, have a concert, something, anything. Raise some money for this. Get it to him and get him his gear. And let's get him back down to what he's really good at doing.
It would feel really good now if I did manage to get a few quid together to get any sort of decent camera again. I'd like, you know, rather than the guards looking at that and going, okay, he's trying to get a camera back. Nobody wants to give him any money for a camera. He's not getting the camera, little bollocks. You know, if we go say, damn, he's got another camera. He's back again,
he's,
you know.
He's soaring again. Damn. So, if it wasn't for those pesky kids.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm hoping I can build some bridges with these guards. Anyway, I sent that video to local radio station that I used to work in, and hopefully they'll get it tomorrow. Okay. Maybe they might be interested, because I'd like to build bridges with them. I don't want to fall out with them or anything like
again,
that.
Again, that's I'm glad you said that, because that's another thing. I mean, that's partly why I'm making this offer to a lot of groups out there for their graphics, for example. It's a small gesture. I know a lot of people, A, don't have the time, B, don't have the skill sets, and C, don't have the computers to do these things or software, and some don't even know where to look. So I'm kind of trying to build bridges with a few groups as well. That may be in the past, slight differences or whatever from some of our members with some of their members. And I'm saying, look, let's put all that behind us, lads. Let's work together. Let's join them. What do you need? Tell us what you need. Someone on PIR will know how to help you out. Or is there anyone in your group that can help us out? We need to do X, Y, Z. And we're joining hands, and we're, you know, we're becoming stronger. I mean, the DDI guys have been talking to other groups as well, and they're talking about merging or joining and eventually coming under a new umbrella name, I believe. And that's the intention, which is brilliant to see, because that's our strength, Steve, coming together. It's way too easy. How easy is it, folks, to use your digits on the internet and a keyboard and find an enemy? You can do it like that. Just go onto Facebook and have an opinion. I can assure you, you'll find an enemy. If you're looking for enemies, you will find them.
Yeah.
But you can find friends too. And when you find friends, I think, you know, I hate to see it. I hate to see the bitching that goes on social media sites. I hate it. I was targeted by a lot of that for years myself. But and I didn't respond for years. So I just sucked it up. I said, no, I won't respond. But eventually I had to. But and it's not nice. It's horrible. It's horrible. But once we mature, and you see, I think that's what's happening now, Steve. A lot of us are starting to mature and realise, yeah, okay, so that guy disagrees with me. Yeah, okay, so he disagrees. Fine.
Yeah.
I won't insult him personally. I won't, you know, I'll address the point. You know, I've been telling people about, you know, go look at the logical fallacy websites. So many people in their arguments are using logical fallacies, they'd be shocked if they actually found out, I think, genuinely.
Yeah.
And once you train yourself to recognise logical fallacies, you're less likely to use them. And it means it's a more passive means of communication, so you can still get your point across, and you're not going to end up with some psycho hunting you down from the internet, you know, because they're out there, folks. They are out there.
Yeah, yeah, no, you're dead right. It's the only way to go now, people getting together and losing the ego a little bit.
Well, again, even preconceived ideas people might have had about you, Steve, the fact that you've come on here tonight now, again, I know you were on Michonne, etc., But maybe somebody had some negative preconceived ideas about you prior to hearing you on here tonight. And maybe now they think, you know what, actually, that Steve Carey's not a bad bloke. You know what? I haven't got much of €50. I'm going to send it to him.
Well, I mean,
I'd like to think that'll happen.
Anything would be, it's absolutely fantastic. And all I can do is promise people that if I do get this money and get a new camera, I'm going to be.
Well, we know you will. You see, even if you ended up with this little crappy little camera, I know you'd still go and use it and you'd still go and make a video and you'd still go, I was at a situation, here's what happened, here's the account. What I like about the way you present what you do is you kind of do it like the no comment news, sort of. You don't try to put your own spin on things generally. And I kind of like that. We have been guilty in the past, I think, here sometimes of putting a bit of spin, not negative spin, but our own spin, if you will, on things. And we're probably going to do that again. That's kind of the way we work. But you're even more, what's the word? You're kind of even more passive than we are in that regard.
Mm. Yeah, well, that's like true, because maybe early on, I don't know if I put a few strong opinions out and they were smashed back, maybe I didn't take everything into account properly. Like, Jesus, maybe so. Okay, so I'm just gonna present.
It's the learning process, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you see, this is it. I mean, I think how long am I here now? We're doing this about 6 years now, I think, or thereabouts. And I've learned so much. I mean, if you listen to some of my early stuff, even I would have my head, my hands gone, oh my God. and even last week I owe an apology to one of the guys I had on there during the week. People were saying to me, you're talking over him, Vin, stop doing that. And I did. And so I had to go, yep, hands up in the air. I was being rude. I was talking over the guy. Very sorry. Shouldn't have done that. So, I mean, sometimes it's unintentional, you know, but at the same time, it's difficult. It is difficult.
But we're all learning.
We are all learning. We are.
We're not professional. We're not getting paid. We're not getting paid Ryan Tobert's rates. I don't think, are we?
Jesus, I do it for half. I do it for half anyway.
Jesus, right?
I'd put a wig on for that. Lovely. Well, listen. Are you happy enough then with what you've done tonight? I know you didn't. I know you only said you wanted to be on for half an hour. It's been a bit more than that, just so you know.
Yeah, I know. No, I only said that because I didn't want to be rambling and bloody boring people. But yeah, I am. And thanks for getting in touch with me straight away. You were one of the first people that got in touch with me. And thanks again for your donation. I really appreciate it.
You're more than welcome. Well, look, and what, just anything that we need to know that's coming up, you know, that should we keep an eye out on? Or?
I suppose this is kind of thrown me just the last couple of weeks. My main objective is to... there's a crew of, you know, the guts of maybe 10 people that I'm going to be meeting up with soon to try and finalise plans for the Irish Media Alliance and get a structure in place so that we're producing, you know, regular professional content. So, I mean, that's my main focus or objective at the moment. I suppose this bloody phone thing has just gotten the way over the last few weeks. And even when you're, it's amazing how much time it takes to kind of write a well-worded letter, you know, because I've written four of them just in this 3-week period. And you sit down to write it and a few hours later, you're still, you know, perfecting it or whatever, reading it back and going, oh, I might change that. So it has, it's just taken up a lot of bloody time the last few weeks. So it's, I want to get this out of the way. One way or the other, I can pretty much take for granted I'm not going to get the phone back anytime soon. Or even if I do, I just have to presume now that my personal life is you know, it's open to all the guards. I'm sure they've.
It's a horrible feeling, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Do you know what I think it equates to? It's like somebody who comes home and just realizes I've just been burgled. It's horrible. It's but it's an invasion of privacy. It really is. Even if they didn't look at the other stuff, you don't know, right? And it's like that not knowing.
Yeah.
No, it's horrible. It's horrible.
It is. It's terrible. Like, because I've unfortunately just heard so many stories over the last couple of years with different people, whether it's through the Integrity Ireland group or whether it's through the Justice for All group or whatever, and the amount of stress that people have been called by certain caused by certain individual guards. And I'm saying individual guards, as you say, it's a big operation of 13,000-14,000, whatever it is, and there's only a few bad apples, obviously. But some of the lengths that can go
I don't know.
For people, like,
I think there's more bad apples in there now than there ever was. I mean, they're talking about giving them all tasers now. Did you see that? Mm-hmm.
I heard it mentioned. Yeah, Jesus, yeah. Let's hope that doesn't happen.
I'm going to say it. That night when you were crossing the road. Had they had tasers, Steve, you would have got tasered that night.
Yeah.
I mean, that puts it into perspective for a lot of people, I think. You know, a lot of people are thinking, yeah, that night when that thing happened, me and the guard, had he got a taser on him that night, folks, you'd have been tasered. No two ways.
Yeah. So, anyway, we'll see how it goes. It's an annoyance, really, but everything for a reason. Let's look at it like that.
Excellent. Okay. Sorry, I was just reading something in the chat box there. Sorry, I think everyone's okay. No, I don't think I missed any questions for Steve, did I, folks? If I missed any questions, quickly let me know, because I think he's about to go, and I have a song lined up, and I need to use, I need to take a natural break, as they say. Okay, don't see anything coming up. Okay, you're good to go, Steve. Thanks very much.
Thanks again, Vin. I
really appreciate you. Folks, the links are, I'll post the links again, and I'll put out an email to all members of the site with those email links in there again, okay?
Brilliant.
So hopefully it works out for you. Thanks, Steve.
Take care, Vin. Thanks.
God bless.
Bye. See you, everyone.
I'm going to play a little video for you. And it's only short, but this is a very important, very, very important video. And what's surprising is it was made by the police in England. I don't know what's going to happen in the sense that, you know the way, let's just say people would say, let's say people had a sexual hookup and they'd say, you know what, I F star star ED the hell out of them. I think that's going to become, what a night last night, I consented the hell out of such and such. And here's why I say that. Have a look at this.
If you're still struggling with consent, just imagine instead of initiating sex, you're making them a cup of tea. You say, hey, would you like a cup of tea? And they go, oh my God, I would love a cup of tea, thank you. Then you know they want a cup of tea. If you say, hey, would you like a cup of tea? And they're like, you know, I'm not really sure. Then you can make them a cup of tea, or not, but be aware that they might not drink it. And if they don't drink it, then, and this is the important bit, don't make them drink it. Just because you made it doesn't mean you're entitled to watch them drink it. And if they say, no thank you, then don't make them tea. At all. Just don't make them tea. Don't make them drink tea, don't get annoyed at them for not wanting tea, they just don't want tea, okay? They might say, yes please, that's kind of you. And then when the tea arrives, they actually don't want the tea at all. Sure, that's kind of annoying, as you've gone to all the effort of making the tea, but they remain under no obligation to drink the tea. They did want tea. Now they don't. Some people change their mind in the time it takes to boil the kettle, brew the tea, and add the milk. And it's okay for people to change their mind, and you are still not entitled to watch them drink it. And if they are unconscious, don't make them tea. Unconscious people don't want tea, and they can't answer the question, do you want tea, because they're unconscious. Okay, maybe they were conscious when you asked them if they wanted tea, and they said yes, but in the time it took you to boil the kettle, or brew the tea, and add the milk, they are now unconscious. You should just put the tea down, make sure the unconscious person is safe, and this is the important part again, don't make them drink the tea. They said yes then, sure, but unconscious people don't want tea. If someone said yes to tea, started drinking it, and then passed out before they'd finished it, don't keep on pouring it down their throat. Take the tea away, make sure they are safe, because unconscious people don't want tea. Trust me on this. If someone said yes to tea around your house last Saturday, that doesn't mean they want you to make them tea all the time. They don't want you to come around to their place unexpectedly and make them tea and force them to drink it, going, but you wanted tea last week, or to wake up to find you pouring tea down their throat, going, but you wanted tea last night. If you can understand how completely ludicrous it is to force people to have tea when they don't want tea, and you are able to understand when people don't want tea, then how hard is it to understand when it comes to sex? Whether it's tea or sex, consent is everything. And on that note, I'm going to make myself a cup of tea.
I'm going to be real careful about what I say now. Okay, I put that little video on Facebook as well. As I said, made by the police in England. And of course, it's about consensual sex. Fine, I get that. Now, what surprises me in that video, of course, is I keep thinking to myself, why was it necessary for the cops to make what I feel to be such a blindingly obvious video Who doesn't know? Who's raising their sons and daughters to not know about consent? And the truth is, we are. We are not educating our children about contract. That whole video is about contract, consenting to the contract, in that case, of sexual relations. But it's exactly the same thing for banks, assault, civil contract. It, all those elements, they're all there. You see? Let's say somebody agreed to the cup of tea, okay? Yeah, I'll have a cup of tea. Ooh, suit you, okay? Let's see. I'll have a cup of tea. I like a cup of tea. Little twinkle in their eye. And they said, oh, every day I will drink a cup of tea from you. And every day they show up to make the tea. But you've run low on tea, and you don't have much water, and you don't have much milk. And you can't give them the full cup of tea every day. You said you would, you promised you would, you promised the bank, building society, whatever, that you'd pay the mortgage, the full amount. You did promise that. We all promised. We all made that promise. But unintentionally, we've run out of milk and sugar and tea and water, and we only have a little bit. But we want to honour the contract. So what do? We make them a little itty-bitty cup of tea, and we say, look, that's the best I can do. Will you accept the tea? And that's what the official offer process is, folks. You say, yeah, I know. I promised you a cup of tea every day. With the best will in the world, I said that at the time. I was being genuine. But I didn't understand that there was going to be a tea shortage. Apparently you guys did, because you guys are in control of the tea movements and milk production and all of that jazz. I didn't know that. You got me to agree to give you a cup of tea every day, a full mug of tea even in some cases, it's a Burgo boiler full of tea. You got me to agree to that, and you didn't tell me you were in charge of tea production. So it's a bit rich tea, for you to come to me now and say, hey, it's your fault you're not making me the cup of tea you promised every day. Well, how can I? You're reducing the supply of tea and milk and sugar, etc. That's the official offer process, folks. It's all in that little video. Have a look at that again. It's a good one. And here's another little one I'd like to play for you as well. This is about, it's only a couple of minutes, but this is about, you know what, I'm just going to play it and I'll comment on it afterwards.
Yes, hello. Hey, today on Facebook we asked you how much you know about the money you're borrowing. Some very interesting answers and some stupid answers. Facebook's a bit like that. Well, you can add your 2 cents to the national debt by visiting 7sharp.co.nz and having your say. Well, you might have a big fat mortgage and a big fat interest rate to service that mortgage. I know I certainly do. But what if we told you that the money the bank lent you doesn't actually exist?
You're paying interest on a loan that's been conjured up out of thin air. Sounds crazy? Watch this story by Heather Duplessis Allen.
People are becoming more and more indebted. Paying the price that they can't afford simply to have a home. It was like a light went on. The banks created money out of thin air.
Just in case you didn't get that, here it is again.
The problem with money is that it's created by private overseas-owned banks out of thin air and then lent to you and I at compounding interest.
Created not really like this, more like this.
But ultimately, these numbers do represent this, the hard stuff. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking banks don't print money. The government prints the money. Or maybe the Reserve Bank prints the money. Well, that's what I thought too, but it turns out that we are all wrong.
The banks create the loan out of nothing and then give you the money that they don't have.
Don Richards and Sue Hamill, a normal Wellington couple who want that sort of lending to stop. But before we go there, let's get our heads around how this works.
Let's pretend for a moment that I'm the bank and you want to buy a house that costs $500,000. So you'll need to give me $50,000 as a deposit.
Okay, so there's my deposit. So I need $450,000 from you.
That's right. So where am I going to get the money from? I just go into...
Because you obviously don't have it.
No. That's right. I just go into the computer, type in 450, hit enter. There's your money. There's $450,000.
You've just made $450,000 out of absolutely nowhere.
That's right.
I now have to pay interest on.
That's right.
Money that you don't have, never have had.
That's right.
And this, through home loans, this is how money is introduced into the system.
Yes, that's right.
But it feels a bit like a trick.
Well, it is, really.
We checked the figures. Last year, this much new money appeared in the country.
It's almost like a big Ponzi scheme.
Did you just call banks a big Ponzi scheme?
I said it's almost like a big Ponzi scheme.
You're probably thinking there must be more to it. No, this is an International Monetary Fund document that backs up what we've just told you. See this? Banks are almost fully in control of the money creation process.
If you want to read this for yourself, you can find it on our website.
Still unconvinced?
No, this is this is what you learn in first year economics at university. This is how banks work, and there is no sort of great mystery to it.
Shamabil Yakub, economist. Quite surprised that we're, well, surprised.
If you have faith that the money is there, then it all works. And that's what our system works on. It's based on faith that the institutions, the banks, the system that's in place, the rules and regulation protects us, and that we won't go bankrupt and we will have our obligations paid.
Exactly. So why should you care? Well, some say because banks can just keep producing money, it'll just keep driving up the price of our houses. And if we lose faith, you could lose all your money in the bank.
The chairman of the UK Financial Services Authority came out at the end of last year and said the primary cause of the financial crisis was the fact the authorities had not restrained the ability of the private banks to issue and create the money supply.
Are you advocating that governments print money?
Absolutely, but in limited quantities.
Former London banker Raf Manji, former colleague of John Key, he thinks the government should print the money and use it to pay for Christchurch's rebuild.
The thing about the government is that they can issue the money supply interest-free. So, for example, for an infrastructure project that needs say, $1 billion, the government can actually issue that directly into circulation. There's no interest charge. If the banks issued that into circulation, it would come with interest.
But what's wrong with the way that we do things now?
There's no control. That's the problem. And the problem is also, why should we be paying interest to fund public infrastructure projects when we don't need to?
Or all that interest on your mortgage, say Don and Sue. They still owe $140,000 on their house and don't think that much debt is fair.
When I looked at the future for my daughters, I've got two young girls who've just come out of university. They are saddled with a student loan. They have to save for their retirement, but they also want to buy a house. So they're going to be in debt all their lives. And that's not the future I want to leave for my children.
Now, we could have had any number of economists in to discuss the yin and the yang of what we've just seen, but we'd rather know what you think, frankly.
All right, look, a couple of points here. First of all, the government lending money interest-free, that's never going to happen because what else does the government do for us for free? Nothing. So forget that. That's not going to happen. As far as the interest rates on the banks go now, we're having a bit of a scan around. Obviously, it's going to vary with depending on which bank you go to and the term you get it over. But, you know, 5-ish percent to 6.5, 6.7% is what the rates they're lending at are. The OCR, which is the basis of what these guys operate from, has been 2.5% for nearly 2 years. It's 2 years in March.
There's a gap between those.
And people are going to,
oh, no, that's not
down.
What it's all about, but it's a big part of it. That's their starting point. So if you're wondering why, you know, the interest rates are so high, you have to say, doesn't the government need to intervene and get these banks to get a bit more realistic with their profit margin? But the bottom line is people saying, look, it's a Ponzi scheme, it's going to tumble down. No, it's not, because New Zealanders are hardwired, and most people are hardwired, to have a house. To have a house, you've got to have a mortgage. It's not going to tumble down. There's nothing to believe in. We want a roof over our head. We want bricks and mortar. It's going to work. A Ponzi scheme just depends on faith. This doesn't. It depends on people wanting to have a house. We all do. Simple.
Keen to know whether you're okay with it, though. Don and Sue plainly are not. They're running a campaign similar to ones in the UK and the US at the moment, calling for a complete overhaul of the New Zealand financial system. Ha, sounds so easy, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. If you want to know more about their campaign, their website is on your screen now.
And guys, an interesting reaction on Facebook to this today. Most people weren't aware that this was the case, but feel quite helpless to do anything about it. There's that sort of lethargy or that hopelessness. And one interesting comment from Josh Barr came in on Facebook, and Josh said that, well, leverage played a really large part in the global financial crisis, so it's definitely something to be mindful of, something that we should be doing something about. By the way, in your profile pic, Josh, it looks like your girlfriend's got a bit of leverage on your face. But thanks for contributing, and it's always welcome, Facebook or Twitter. Hey, coming up on the...
How's that for an interesting little video? Okay, a couple of points. Number one, I'm just going to address some of the things that were said in that video, and I will give you the link, guys, so you can have a look at it later on and go through it yourself. Okay, so, number one, money is created out of thin air. Well, what the hell did you think it was created out of in the first place? Of course, it's always been created out of thin air. Everything that relates to that structure or that system, even gold. Gold is a fiat currency, folks. Fiat means, it's a Latinism, if you will. It's let there be. Fiat lux, okay, in Genesis in the Bible. Let there be light. Let there be. Not, I'm going to create light, but let there be. So it's, let there be a currency. Let it be gold, right? it's a conjuring trick for us, essentially. So yes, of course it came from thin air. Because it's not real. Money itself is not real in that sense. Not in that sense. The notes, for example, these pieces of paper, these, they used to be trees. I prefer them still as trees. But, yeah, they chop down the trees and they print something on them. They put the idea on, you know, let's pretend. That's what money... You pretend that this is money... And I'll pretend to loan it to you if you promise to pretend that when you agree to pay it back to me, that it's actually possible for you to do so, even though you don't understand the structure of the system, even though you don't know how it works, right? So money out of thin air, yeah. Well, what the hell did you think it came from? See, gold is not money, folks. It can be used as a money, as can silver, as can copper, as can shells and sticks, you know, tally sticks. They were used as money, even though the Bank of England insist tally sticks weren't money. They facilitated transactions, which is essentially what money is for. That's what, and we created money, folks, not the banks. We did, mankind. It's money is a tool that mankind created, yes, out of thin air. We conjured it up in our head. That's how you know it's out of thin air. Well, it's just an idea somebody had. Hey, wouldn't it be easier if maybe instead of me giving you sheep and you giving me cows and I don't need a cow, so I have to find somebody else who needs a cow to get the chickens I want, wouldn't it be easier if we had something that would represent that perceived value? And we just passed that around and made it more convenient instead of having to have a pocket full of chickens, right? That's all money is. It's for us to facilitate our transactions with one another. That's all. That's all. In other words, will you agree to build me a garden shed if I give you six chickens? And you say, yeah, but, well, I would, but I don't need six chickens. What if I could give you something that represents the value of six chickens? Okay. Well, I'm going to take a pen and a piece of paper and I'm going to write this down. Now, if you take that to Bob down the road there, I deal with Bob too, and Bob recognises my notes. And Bob will honour that note for you. Bob has a little, he's like a little grocery. You can buy all sorts of things down there with that note. You can purchase them. You can use the labour you used here building my shed. You can now use my signature on my document to you to give to Bob. He will recognize it, and you can purchase. To purchase means to hold, you know, to get purchase on something. And everything will be tickety-boo, okay? That essentially is how a mathematically perfected economy works, folks. There's no interest in there. What happened was the bankers got involved, and then they said, we want a little interest. We want a little juice on the transactions, like the mafia. We want the juice, right? That's what they want, the juice. And that's what they call it in Goodfellas, yeah? You look at the movie Goodfellas, you'll hear your man saying, yeah, well, you know, when they're divvying up what happens, what was it, Goodfellas? I'm nearly sure it was Goodfellas. And your man said, well, I don't want them to pay me back the loan. I want the juice on the loan, yeah? One guy was getting that part paid back, and the other guy just wanted the interest, essentially. Now, so what, says you? You see, the moment you introduce interest into the monetary system, you're doing a couple of things. You're not destroying everything immediately. What you're doing is you're saying, everybody has to use my money, number one, right? That's what the banks have done with the governments, the so-called governments, the commercial corporate governments. And they've said, you can use our money at interest. And the governments betrayed all of their own citizenry. They went into breach of trust by agreeing to do that. End of story. There are no excuses. It's a breach of trust, period. That is why not one government that's operating with a monetary system that has usury in it, not one of them are free from that breach of trust. Okay? Not one of them. So, on top of that, the interest, the banking system, doesn't produce extra money and inject it into the system to allow for you to collect this money of interest to give it to them to satisfy the interest, which you did tell them you would give it to them as interest. You told them. They only asked for it. You said, sure, I'll give you the interest. No problem. Because we all look at the microcosm. We see, well, my little life, my little job, my little house, my little car, my little life, okay? But the banks know better. The banks look at the macrocosm. They looked at the whole deal. And they said, you know what? If we can pull this off, we'll have to do it slowly, softly, gently, little itty-bitty bits of interest here and there. If we pull this off, over large cycles of time, perceived or otherwise, but in their head, you know, if we keep doing this, slowly we will begin to accumulate all of the perceived value of the work, the time that these people have in their lives, perceived or otherwise, you know, however you see time. But they see it this way. And time, people have always said to me, what's money? I'm going to tell you right now what money is. Time is money. That's what it is. The idea of time and money are interchangeable. They keep telling everybody, time is money, money is time, time is money. How many times have you heard that? And you ask people, what's money? And they go, oh, you know, I don't know. Euro notes, gold, silver, bullion. Derivative swaps. They don't know. It's time. That's what it is. The time I took to build the garden shed versus the time it took you to raise the chickens to give me and fed them and looked after them to give me an equal value of the time I used up from my life to build you the shed, and you're going to compensate me from the time you took in your life to rear those chickens to hand over to me as food or energy. That's the money. That's what money is. You'll hear people come up with all other sorts of notions. Oh, it's mon eye, it's one eye, it's the all-seeing eye. And I think that was Mark Passio. I understand Mark Passio gives that out there as he's trying to, you know, get people to view it. But that's not correct. Money, the idea of money was, it was for us to do our transactions. Transactions. Actions. I acted. I built you your shed. You acted. You raised the chickens. You fed them. You made sure they were healthy. And you acted. You gave them to me when I built your shed, when I acted. It's a transaction. Yeah? That's all it is. There's no big mystery about it, okay? But the bank and the bankers, they know they never insert interest into circulation. So the only way for you to pay interest is you have to take money of circulation. And when you give it to them as interest, they go, oh, look, he's given us interest. And they, if you will, they pretend to not know how you manage to do that. They know exactly how you manage to do it. You just reduced the amount of circulation of currency by the amount of interest you just gave to that bank. Now, because of the fractional Reserve Lending System, now you have no option, or somebody else just like you has no option but to go to the bank to borrow that amount and to allow for the interest that's now been taken out of circulation, and you're going to have to increase the circulation, and the value of everything is going to drop because the interest is rising, so the perceived value is dropping, even though people will tell you, but the prices have gone up, so now you're making money. You bought a house 10 years ago for 10 grand and now you're selling it for 50 grand. You've made a profit. No, you haven't. What's happened is the money had a value of 10 grand at the time you bought that house. And a few years later, when you're selling the house for 50 grand, the money, because it's the same house, the house hasn't bloody well changed, has it? I mean, barring home improvements, but I mean, overall, the house is the house. Now, the money is worth less than it used to be, because it used to be only 10 grand is all you needed to buy that house. You still have to work the same number of hours to get, say, 10 grand, or maybe that's going up 4% per year over so many years, but it's only going up 4%. But the house has now gone up 5 times the value. So that house, your money has dropped. You are not gaining anything. You're being robbed blind. Robbed blind. And it is blindness. It's illumination, as the Masons would say. It's illumination that makes things clear to you. That's where you get clarity of mind from. You must turn the light on inside yourself. I can't turn your light on no more than you can turn mine on. You gotta pull the old cord yourself, turn your own light on. So why can't you afford to pay them back? Well, you can't afford to pay them back in Ireland, right? There's 100,000 families who can't afford to pay mortgages right now. Well, of course they can't. Why will you never hear anybody say why? The reason they can't is because there's usury in the monetary system. That is primarily the reason, globally, practically, right? And because that's in the monetary system, until that is addressed, nothing will change. Nothing. It can't. It cannot. In that video, interestingly, the man said, well, it's almost like a Ponzi scheme. And she said, oh, a Ponzi scheme. And he said, almost. He is correct. It almost means it's not a Ponzi scheme. I mean, did you get elected? Almost. No, you didn't get elected, right? Is it a Ponzi scheme? Almost. No, it's not a Ponzi scheme. Now, the guy in the thing, the video, he got it wrong. He said, oh, that's based on belief. No, it's not. A Ponzi scheme is a very specific structure, folks. It's a pyramidic structure, and you're depending on the people at the bottom, excuse me, and an ever-increasing amount of people must join a Ponzi scheme for it to perpetuate. That's not how the monetary system works. It's not a Ponzi scheme. It kind of looks like it in some minuscule way, but it is not a Ponzi scheme. Go to Wikipedia, look up a Ponzi scheme, and I know you're going, Wikipedia, Vin? Yeah. Actually, it's not bad at the explanation and the description they give for the Ponzi scheme. But that's not what banking is. If you're calling banking a Ponzi scheme, you don't understand banking, or you don't understand Ponzi schemes, one or the other. Faith. They said it's based on faith. Now, you see, good faith, that's something men and women have toward each other, or not, as it were. But with a banking system, there can be no good faith. There can be the perception of good faith because in your mind, Joe, man, I just want to do my job and get by, man. Don't be giving me all this heavy stuff to deal with. Ignorance is not bliss, folks. Ignorance of the monetary system is terminal. Ignorance of the monetary system for a population results in what we're seeing right now. It is ignorance that we are suffering from. Knowledge and education and understanding is the only thing that's really, really going to change things for humanity globally. It's the only thing. getting angry, by all means, be and feel anger. But first you must recognise, who should you be angry with and at? Not the bankers. It's not the bankers' fault. Yes, back in the day, there were some men who got this scheme going. It's their fault. They're probably dead 1,000 years at this stage, maybe longer, who knows. And the people who've been perpetuating it, some of them, probably very few, actually really understand what's going on. But that doesn't mean you can't. Doesn't mean you can't sit down and work out, well, how does this whole thing go together? You do have that ability. You are an intelligent individual. You are a sovereign, unique intelligence. You can work this out. You can explain this to other people and you can say, but don't get angry, just understand it. Realize, here's the areas that we need to change. And if we change these areas, it's no longer an issue. Let's make money something that's no longer an issue for mankind. Well, the only way we're going to do that is through a mathematically perfected economy. There is no other way. Like the stuff that guy was talking at the end there, it was just nonsense. So when they put these numbers into computers, they just conjured it out of thin air. But with your permission. Who didn't go into the bank and say, yeah, okay. Are you telling me at the time, if the bank said to you, now you do realise, Mr. Smith, that if you put your signature on this document, we're going to conjure up a couple of $100,000 into existence. Most people, and I can assure you, most people at the time would have just went, well, okay. Okay. Why? Because they didn't know any better. They didn't know any better. I didn't know any better. Did you know any better at the time? I didn't. If they'd have said that to me, I'd have went, okay. I wouldn't. Well, they're the bank, right? The banks and governments, and they know what they're doing, don't they? I thought so. At the time. I know better now. But I only know better now because I thought this through. I worked on it. I worked on myself. I worked on me. That's the answer, folks. Work on yourself. Why can governments not issue interest-free money? I will tell you why. The governments are not in charge. The banks are in charge of the governments. Not the other way around, folks. Not the other way around. I know it's not supposed to be that way, but it is. And until that changes, nothing will change. It basically can't. It cannot. So look, that's it from me for tonight. I'm going to say Ihawahaga's Kula Soft. Thank you very much for tuning in. As always, it's a pleasure. And what am I going to pick for you here? Yeah, okay. Well, we'll go with this little short bit of Johnny Cash to finish off. Good night. God bless. Don't forget, Super Big Bad Man is up next with Cancel the Cabal. Talk to you all soon. Good night. God bless.